Our welcome and greetings to the Acting Director General, Ambassador Nkosi, and his team from the Department of International Relations and Cooperation. Is there anyone who needs to be introduced? Doesn't seem like that today. And this being the first meeting after a long recess of Parliament, we should express our profound welcome and gratitude to the members of this committee who, as directed by Parliament, were involved in their constituency offices doing their party work, different parties that are represented in Parliament. And of course, we extend our warm welcome to the Department of International Relations, and we must say that so far, you know, naturally there's supposed to be, or there will always be, or sometimes has to be, tension between a department and a portfolio committee. such tension will be occasioned by different reasons, that things are not done or have not been done well. we, and I'm speaking for the chair perhaps, that we've had a very good relationship with the department and its leadership, where the leadership and management accepts that members of parliament must express their unreserved views on things that they feel have not been done or have not been done well, and things that perhaps they think just unnerves the public. And we think that the department has taken that to heart, and we think things should be that way. Everyone must be polished. Ambassador Nkosi, is it put that way? Everyone needs to be polished by another one on whether they are doing things the way they should do them. So it's good and healthy for the department that we should oversight it, but also it is good and healthy for the members to be whipped by someone, whether as public representatives they do their work. So all of these things are good for South Africa. So I'm saying that generally we've had a good working relationship with the department, but also ourselves as a committee. the agenda is before us, and before that, can we record all apologies that must be recorded? Honorable, not honorable, not at least not now. Sir, apologies.
Thank you, Chair. We received 5 apologies, Chair. The first one is from the Minister and PM. They are attending the TED-8 Summit in Namibia. And then the other one is from...
Image. And our Minister.
And Deputy Minister and Howlett. They are in Namibia, Chair.
And then who else?
Who is attending the London Chair? He is attending cabinet, providing three memos on behalf of the project. And then the fourth one is from Ongo, Kenya. She has bereavement. And the last one is from Ongo, Sharia, and she is attending another meeting.
Where is my cousin, Bergman?
Chair, Honorable Beckman is attending sports committee.
Is he my cousin?
Well,
I thought you were going to start by that correction.
You said it.
Further apologies. Ambassador, any apologies?
Yes, thanks very much, Honorable Chairperson. I would like to apologize on behalf of the Director General, who is currently convalescing at home following a minor procedure. We look forward to having him back next month, and I'm sure he will grace this august committee upon his return. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Acting DJ Ngosi. Now, the apologies have been recorded and they are duly accepted. Now, can I hear the members on the agenda? And there are two principal issues there. The oral... Can I just rephrase number four?
Mm-hmm.
It should be the oral report on the joint oversight visit. Joint oversight visit. I think visit is better than a trip, you know. But joint is even very important. to Namibia, and then as it stands, and then, of course, briefing by the department. Honorable Sally, you wanted to assist at server. Honorable Kalyan.
I wanted to add an agenda item, so are we still on number three, adoption of the agenda?
Yes, we're still on number three. What is that?
Trips.
And the announcements.
When we put you a day, yes.
BRICS is in the 10th BRICS summit.
Yes.
So, the 10th BRICS summit.
Chair, can I ask on the same point four, the oral report, well, what is the purpose of the oral report?
We'll explain that.
Okay.
We'll explain everything. Are we fine, Honorable Raputi?
I move for the adoption of the agenda with both amendments. But I'm asking myself, how long is that oral report? It's not going to take long. That's my last.
We'll speak to that.
Mm. But
Thank you, Honourable Chair. May I then align myself in terms of moving the agenda? But for me, I would like to maybe moving forward, not today, to have an approach as to how do we process the agenda items as it way, because I would like to have an input on that space, but saving time today, let's leave it and just send it there, because you can't, from where I'm seated, you can't table an agenda on the day of the meeting and expect the department to respond to that agenda item, having not prepared anything from their side. Thank you. But I don't know, but I'm fine. Thank you.
No, I'm thinking, and I thought that I must express a view. It is normal. Somebody's phone has just... Yeah. And it could be blaring very soon. No, Honorable Whip, I was going to say that It does happen that when you sit in a meeting, members do suggest a particular item for discussion. Now, whether the item is for the members or is for the department, when we come to it, we will then make a determination as to how it should be handled. Because certain items are of such a nature that you couldn't factor them in writing. And it could be that either the chair or the members or the department has been advised by leadership that that item should serve because of its urgency. So, I mean, it can be me next time. It hasn't been told by the chief whip or by the speaker. You guys must, or not guys, you must discuss this and tell us what you think must happen. Yeah, remember we're on holidays now, so well, so these no, thing, guys, we are love. The agenda is so adopted with the addition of the 10th BRICS Summit. Now, let me speak to item number 4. Comprehensively. And I don't know exactly where to start, but it is better that I start this way. In the last discussion that we took on the Foreign Service Bill on the clause by clause, from clause 1 up to clause number 13, Ambassador Nkosi, the committee made with specific reference to clause number 8, which is dealing with state property, made a preliminary recommendation or a preliminary determination, if you like, that the bill, the Foreign Service Bill, contemplates that state property must vest under the custodianship of the Department of International Relations and Cooperation. And in terms of the practice, in terms of legislation as we speak, DERCO does not have a lawful authority to do anything outside the country because, you know, this bill, this is the first time that we have got a bill like that. The department that vests with such a lawful authority is the Department of Public Works, in terms of the government immovable property. It's just called Kiama. That's what is happening. So what we then did as a committee, we said, because the bill contemplates that the property outside the country must go to DERCO, we agree with that. But you see, the word preliminary is very important in this instance. We said, that's the preliminary recommendation or determination that we are making. Then members even used the word pending. They said, pending a visit to one of the countries where there are state properties. Now, those countries, you had Namibia, you had Germany, according to the report we got from the department in February this year. Germany, Namibia, Switzerland, Canada, Zimbabwe, etc., etc., etc. And the committee then said, we must visit one of the countries. And the reason why the committee picked on Namibia was because, just a little bit of history, Namibia has been under the administration or was given the trusteeship of the then Southwest Africa in 1919 after the Treaty of Versailles. You see, something... things that have been happening under colonialism are interesting sometimes. South Africa was invited to fight on the side of the British in the First World War, because Southwest Africa was a German colony from the Berlin Conference 1894-1895. So after Germany was defeated, its colonies, both in Africa and in the Balkan states, were distributed among the Allies that fought against Germany. So Southwest Africa was given as a gift to South Africa. Thank you for fighting with Britain and others and helping us defeat Germany. Now, we've been in Namibia from 1919 up to 1990. So the honorable members here then said that obviously we have more property there than any other place we've been. And therefore, when we made our application to the chair of committees, we said we want to go to Namibia. And of course, unfortunately, the chair didn't agree with us. We then appealed to the speaker. We think this trip is very important, both for purposes of advising the rest of government about state property outside the country, but specifically for the committee to make a particular determination regarding Clause 8. Okay. Now, the speaker agreed with us, and then we undertook the trip. So, but the speaker then added the Portfolio Committee of Public Works. That's why we're insisting here that in its formulation, this sentence should read Joint Oversight Report. Before I forget, can I just digress a little bit? Honorable Mkhalapa, you were saying oral. Yeah, and I almost mired into details before addressing your concern. The report is oral because we thought that in this sitting in which we were going to consider the fourth quarter report, we should take the leadership or the members of this committee into, not necessarily into confidence, we should inform them about the trip and what was happening. Now, the report will remain oral up to a point where next week there must be a joint committee with the Portfolio Committee of Public Works, which must adopt that report. Those who went there, I'll just indicate just now who are the people who went to Namibia. Now, that's the first thing, that it must be adopted at the level for it to be referred to the minister and to be referred to the speaker. Secondly, there is information that we required from Namibia. For instance, we sent the High Commission there and our own secretariat, because we had two ladies there. I'll also indicate who they were. We said, can we get the title deeds of these houses, or other property that we have here?
Yeah.
Whether that property is land, can we get that? That information must be fed into us. But there was also information that had to come from the municipalities. And the mayor of Windhoek also promised us that he was going to get instructions to ensure that. Now, all of this must be put together and brought to South Africa, then it must constitute a report. Then that report, if I'm able, either by Friday or by Monday, I must refer it to the other chairperson. So you see, what will happen, the way I see it panning out, is that the report must be considered jointly by the two committees and be adopted there, and then thereafter it must be considered by this committee in its own meeting. If I have my way, which I may not have, we should have a meeting with the Public Works Committee for an hour for the purpose of the report, then thereafter we must have our own meeting. In that way, it's going to serve us better, because then the two chairpersons must immediately go to the speaker and say, Speaker, now this report has been duly adopted. Here is the report of our oversight visit to Namibia. So it is oral in that sense, because there is a detail that is not incorporated here. I'm sure that should take care of the legitimate concern. Now, I was then saying that I was going to speak to the members who went there. From the side of Public Works, we have had the chairperson of the committee, Honorable HMZ Memezi, and we had the Honorable EKM Masihela, and we had Honorable CQ Madlopa, and we had the Honorable M. Figi. That's from Public Works Committee, and from our side, we had the Sipho Sezwe Masango, then we had the Honorable R.M.M. Lisoma, who was our whip, and we had the Honorable D. Bergman. And the Honorable Kenny was unable to join us. And then from the support staff, we were ably assisted by the content advisor, Ms. Dineo Mosala, and Ms. Nola Jobotwana, who is the Committee Secretary of Public Works. And then, of course, we met the staff, the High Commissioner there, Commissioner William Whitehead, and his staff. I just said that the speaker directed that both committees must go to Namibia. Why? Because while we as a committee had a limited mandate to look at state property in Namibia, or it could have been any other country, for the purpose of Clause 8, to answer that question, the Committee on Public Works must actually advise the rest of government about what must happen to all the properties of South Africa outside the country, you see. So then we went to Namibia, we met the commissioner. Then I'm just going to get straight into the findings. And before that, there was something also that was important. The department, Darko, said that in its report of February that there were 9 properties that we had in Namibia. The High Commissioner said, no, you don't have 9, you actually have 20. That's why later we demanded we demanded the title deeds. The High Commissioner said, no, you've got 20 properties here, and we found 20 properties there. So we needed to address that kind of issue. So let me get straight into what I think are the findings. There are 20 properties that we have in Namibia. There are 11 in Windhoek. There are 4 in Walvis Bay. Those houses are our property there, classified as supposed to be land, supposed to be houses, residences, offices, and the chancery. We didn't find, there was no land. They were never shown any land that belongs to South Africa, for whatever reason. But these others, the houses, the residences, the chancery, these are these properties that we visited. Most of them are in a terrible state of dilapidation. Very terrible. And we found that some of them are in fact completely unrehabitable. And therefore you could take a decision that you must destroy them and build a new house or a new office. One such property actually was burnt, and therefore it got massive cracks. And we were making that determination or finding from our own lay person's point of view. It could be that the engineers could say something else about the foundation or something else. But that's one observation that we saw. Most of the houses there are actually very old, because they were built by South Africa variously from after 1919 up to 1990. We were told that some were built in the 1960s and some in the 1980s, etc., etc. But in fact, when you look at the location of those houses in the prime areas, South Africa had actually done some good work in investing in property in that country. Beautiful houses, good location, and it's not like I'm saying no, I don't want to bring something controversial. And as members are aware, one of the reasons why we had to go to Namibia was to address the concern that had already been expressed by the president of Namibia, Dr. Hage Geingob, to the Minister of International Relations, that South Africa's property was devaluing their property in Namibia. And the commissioner called me, Commissioner Whitehead, and indicated that the mayors of Namibia and Walvis Bay have also expressed their utmost disquiet about the state of our properties, and that we must do something about that. And he actually made some recommendations in the report that ultimately he gave us. So so the visit was therefore very important in that regard. So I was talking about our findings there, that the houses are in a terrible state of dilapidation. Some cannot be rehabilitated. In fact, they need to be sold. But some can be refurbished at whatever amount, and you can then lease them. You can continue to lease them. Two things didn't sit well with us. One was that one of the houses where we were told the neighbors were complaining because it became a haven for criminals or for sources, to use a South African term, was burnt. And after the house was burnt, no case was reported to the police. Now, you know, the lady who was giving us the report said, we don't know whether it's the neighbors because they were complaining, and we don't know. Then we said, but who will be arrested? How is this going to be investigated? Who will investigate if it was not reported to the police? She was very wishy-washy about creating a lot of suspicion about actually what was happening here. And the other house, which some members said, but this is a typical squatter camp. The other house is very old. That's the house that could have been built in the early 60s. Now, we're told that the electricity is borrowed from a very friendly lawyer next door to this site, because the lady who is a helper in the lawyer's office is sleeping in that house. So he or she is providing electricity. But we found a lot of ladies there with their babies who appear to be non-Namibian, and they are not working. So the claim, if I should use the word, the claim that the lady who's working for the lawyer is staying this side, then you find other people, and they've done partitioning with blankets and sheets, you know, my camera, about 6 to 8 of them in one house. And we're wondering, but who is collecting rent here? To whom is it being paid? Is it really the department? Things like that. Now, in other houses, we found that they have removed the furniture after they felt that something must be done about the house. But they just left, of the three sofas, one sofa would be left there. Or you find a sofa with a lot of cushions. Or you find that the furniture is still there, some parts of the furniture. And other things have been removed, selectively removed, like your air conditioner, this and that, the causing members to feel very uncomfortable that in the transition, if I should word, should use that word, in the transition between, no, not transition, in the transit between that furniture leaving that residence to a place where the, it is being housed, so many things could happen in between. It can get stolen because it is unrecorded. Taking into account that one of the reasons why the Auditor General gives the department a qualified report most of the time is the issue of the assets outside the country, not inside the country. So we could see if the Auditor General were to come here, these are the questions he or she would answer, would ask himself, and then he would give us a qualified report. And to understand what I'm talking about, let me just go back a little bit. Between 1993 and 1994, a lot of property got lost, got stolen in fact, not lost, got stolen by the public works officials, particularly from the homelands. Now, I was telling a story to some of the colleagues that I used to serve in the provincial cabinet of Mpumalanga, MEC for sports, and the MEC of Public Works got wind of this thing and appointed, that is Steve Mabona. I just want to be practical, who did what? The late Steve Mabona, MEC for Public Works. He appointed the late policeman was Fanny Mulapo. Now, Fanny Mulapo used to be a policeman for the PSL. You probably should know him. Now, he led a private investigation team. They found a lot of trucks, furniture, and graders that were stolen from the then Gangwane department, Homeland, Kwandebele department, and from Kazankulu. Because the new government that was going to come in 1994 didn't have, you know, the register of assets, so they could delete and put this and that and that and that and that. They found a lot of them, and many were arrested. Now, you can imagine what would have happened with regard to the property of South Africa outside the country. That is why it is actually strange that you go to Namibia, you don't find land. Land, a farm. But the reason why we have this suspicion, and we'll leave it at that, is because the fellow who was driving me and Honorable Memezi and Honorable Mashopa, these were the three of us in that car and the driver. He said, I'm South African born. We came here when I was 9 or 11 years, and I've been staying here in Walvis Bay. Now I've got my own company, the Shuttle Services. You say you've got four houses, South African houses here. I argue that you have about 100. You see, this site, as we're driving, this site, there was a post office, there were houses for the white people here, da-da-da-da-da. Then this side, you had houses for the white people who were working for public works, but then TPA, I don't know what it was called in Namibia. TPA, depending on your age, Honorable Raputi, the Transvaal Provincial Administration. Nalisa's card.
I know it.
You know it. Yeah, Nick, that's why, depending on your age. Now, there were white people who were working for the TPA. I don't know what it was called in Namibia or Walvis Bay. Then there were others who were working in the harbour. Then he said, how? Four houses, it can't happen. Then he said to us, do you know that Walvis Bay was not given to Namibia upon independence? We said, yes. He said it was given to Namibia by President Mandela in 1994. So he then said something could have happened between 1990 and 1994. But those things must be laid to rest, because you see, one of the officials who appeared to be coming from SWAPO and who told us that they were going to have a land summit in October. Which land summit, we don't know what it will do, but you know, I had the Honorable Lisoma saying, it may affect our property in Namibia, because they may go for expropriation of land and property without compensation, the very thing that we consider doing in South Africa. Now, this fellow had expressed some reservation of some kind. It was like, you South Africans who were our colonizers, now you have come to check the state of your property. Yeah, I mean, there are certain sensitivities. We're an independent country. The ruling party, this thing must be discussed at the party-to-party level on whether you in fact have property here and what would happen to that property, so that we don't appear to be permanently, you know, something like enslaved or colonized by South Africa. Meaning that when you left South Africa, actually, ever since, you don't have anything here. Of course, that argument is a political one. South Africa did build properties in independent countries. I mean, if we've got property in Canada, we never colonized them. Germany, Switzerland, and others. So, let me leave it at that by saying two things that next week the Joint Committee must receive the report, must adopt the report after some effecting some changes. Now, that report must do an important work for Parliament, for this committee and for the Committee of Public Works. It must adjudicate, it must make an adjudicative determination for Parliament between what stands or appears to be a tension between Public Works and DERCO with regard to state property. Because you see, DERCO says give the property outside the country, give it to us, we'll manage it, we'll do everything. If you give it to public to DERCO, you must also say the clauses in Kiama that apply to Public Works in terms of what you must do, acquire, sell, refurbish, that and that, all of those things, that you must then take it as is from Kiama uifake ngapha ngakuDERCO, so that you don't say now you're going to have property outside the country but you don't tell them what will be happening. That is what you might have to do. But the other thing is, Public Works wants to keep I want the ambassador to hear me on this one. Public Works says this is our mandate, even in their presentation when we consulted the 22 or so departments, or 28, if I remember well, Safari. They kept on saying the mandate to acquire, to sell, and that property inside the country and outside the country is our mandate in terms of this act, IGIAMA. Now, if you take it away from them, so in other words, Parliament must adjudicate with regard to this thing, because everyone seem to be digging in their mandate, but at least Public Works has got IGIAMA. DERCO is not yet a lawful authority because the bill has not been passed. So, and you see, this thing must happen. I must just say this thing. The ministers, both ministers, the Minister of Public Works and the Minister of International Relations, must not see this thing as their personal thing, you know. I'm not going to allow this, using even the word I. And the DGs and the chairpersons of the portfolio committees. This thing must be seen far beyond themselves. The next thing, the minister is from this side to the other side. The next thing, the chairperson of a particular committee is not back to Parliament. And the next thing, the DG has resigned. And you have made us take certain decisions. No. It's not about how a particular minister feel or the chairperson of a particular committee. No, it must be about what South Africa want to say regarding this one. But the second one, which is also important, what about the property in Switzerland? We have seen what we have seen in Switzerland, I mean in Namibia. What about in Switzerland? What about in Germany, in Canada, etc., etc.? And one of the things that appear to be in dispute, if I should bring it in, are the prices. Is the prices of those properties. For instance, the value. Okay. That's a better. Thank you very much, Honorable Raputi. The department says the value of our properties in Namibia is 95 million. Some people in Namibia said it could be far more. One house here, an old house, could be 8 million. Why are you saying 95 million? I mean, we have it in the report. And then the department says the value of our property internationally is 5 billion. Well, it could be far more. There is just one good thing I want to say that the two departments did. Once they heard that the joint committees were in Namibia, then minister or yourself, acting DG, and then sent some officials from Terco. They joined us there so that they could have a first-hand observation about what the members were seeing and whatever. So that they can advise your good self as well as the minister. But the other good thing was also public works. Also public works, either the DG or the minister also sent some officials. They joined us, they came in there. So when we're saying, this is what we see, they were also seeing the same thing. But you know what this thing was doing, and I want to step out. But in terms of the image of the country, if you were to speak to the disquiet expressed by the president and the mayor, every street, if you were told now there's something of South Africa in that street, when you go and park there, the ugliest house, ugliest in the in that it is bent or it is dirty, and they were told that they actually cleaned these properties out of respect for us, whatever that means. Because some were saying, but you could have left them in the state in which we were. But they were saying it was grassy, it was dirty, it was smelly, the one that was bent, they said, because it was used by the sources. So, Umoyo Park and the Stratin, the house that was out of order, it was a South African. It was not good for the image of South Africa. So in other words, this last part I'm talking about, the Committee of Public Works, if I have my way, must be allowed to go to Germany, to Switzerland, at least some few countries, and say, once and for all, we think this property must be given to Terco. Speaking for myself, speaking for what the committee was saying so far, was that we must give this responsibility to Terco in terms of the bill, but more money must get into Terco so that it can deal with this property, but then there must be checks and balances. And the checks and balances are based on what is in Kiama currently. But if public works says no, we don't want, and Parliament agrees with them, well, yeah, I think I must put it as that. Let me leave it at that. But Honourable Lisoma could actually, let me invite her to fill us in, just in case I forgot one or two things. I'm not that young anymore, so possible not to remember everything. I'm not old either. Ambassador Saleh, I'm not old, but I'm not young either. Let's agree that I'm in between. Honorable Soma.
Thanks, Chair. Thank you so much. Chair, you have covered everything.
probably just to amplify or add minor on. But also our observation was that there is an inconsistency in terms of application of our policies as well, in respect of what the chair have made an example of a burnt house, that from where we're seated supposed to be reported to police and all other due processes followed, but it was not. And you couldn't even get a clear answer, why is it happening? Secondly, for an example, a house that is occupied by a lawyer, the next door one, which is our corporate image houses, the chair said that any ugly, uncared for house in South Africa, almost actually, there were squatters of a special type. Rental being collected, but you are not too sure where it goes to. When you ask, then there's discomfort. Why are you raising that answer? You could see even the body language and the eyes goes a long way. So hence I'm saying inconsistent in terms of application of the policies. The other one, Chair, that they also, the His Excellency, the Ambassador raised was the HR-related issues that I think also, which has got nothing to do with the Act, but as one of part of our oversight also was said that we'll receive a report on that, which then also I think we need, it will be incorporated in the report. Having just raised those two issues, Chair, I think you have covered everything, because the detail in terms of the paperwork and everything then would be incorporated in this report. Thank you so much for the opportunity, Chair. Thank you.
Content advisor, is there anything that you would like to bring to the attention of members of this committee and the department for noting?
Thank you. I think everything has been covered. Maybe one thing, Chairperson, is the movable assets. To say there were piles and piles of movable assets which were abandoned, which are normally regulated by the Treasury regulations. So it's for the department to actually, you know, work with Treasury so that those, if they are unwanted and they are supposed to be disposed, that should be negotiated with Treasury. There were heaps and heaps of movable assets stored. Actually, it's not even proper stores. Some are left in the in the empty houses. Some are left in houses which are occupied by officials, and some are stashed under some empty rooms at the Chancery.
Very lastly, at a political level, acting DG, I hope to be able to speak to the minister about this. Would like to see movement on the recommendations that will be enunciated in the joint oversight report. Would like to see movement so that the president of Namibia can say that South Africa sent a joint oversight committee and the government through the Minister of Internet is actually acting on this. And again, at a political level, the two mayors would also be very happy to see that action is being taken. Either houses are being refurbished or they are being sold. At least something is being done. If in Namibia can be attended that way, because we would in fact be a laughing stock. Go there as two committees of parliament, then nothing happens, at least in Namibia. You see, we have not been to Germany or to Switzerland. Would be very happy if there can be movement around this thing. But there are issues there that have been raised by the commissioner. Now, we don't want to say this commissioner is more important than all other ambassadors and high commissioners in other countries. Things that could be resolved. Which needs to be attended to. Isn't that besides dealing with this, we also conducted oversight in the chancery itself, the state of the chancery itself. That's what we did. There are parts of the chancery that are very dead because it's an old house. It's an old building, well cared for, of course. In the house of the High Commissioner or the Ambassador, if you like, there is a sitting room that he cannot use, he cannot receive people in, except the upper floor. The one down there, he has just removed the, what is this thing on the sofa? Not the cushion, not the small one. That which you sit on. Just look at the state of this sofa. Can the ambassador, and then that part is very smelly because I don't know whatever is happening there. Then he was doing something on the door because it's a wooden door. It was just falling. And he was saying that getting those things corrected, if I remember well, was 90,000, something like that. It's a very small amount that can be attended to. Now, that's the ambassador of Namibia. We don't know what is happening with other embassies. Personally, speaking for him, I would say that following our visit, just that part of his house where he's supposed to receive his guests, because it's the part that is linked to a swimming pool where people could be standing there when they are having fry, and those he wants to sit with and converse. That part is not right. It's got to be attended to. Yeah. Now the item has been exhaustively discussed. Can we hear members?
Wait for the report, Chair, next week.
Honorable Raputi?
Yeah, we welcome the oral report.
Ima, Honorable Kalyan, there's a speaker on the floor.
Yes,
Raputi?
I was saying that we welcome the report, and I think, as you have stated,
there are also some other properties elsewhere that belongs to South Africa, and we must go out aggressively to obtain them, because those are our tax. That is the South African tax money. So we should go all out. Please, let's ensure that we do thorough investigation. As you said, that this young man there in Namibia was saying that you might be having more than that. So let us really go and research further. However, we will wait for a written report, Chairperson. I'm really thinking very loud now. But yeah, there are people who are being assigned positions, who are being assigned leadership, and really they are not taking their work very seriously. It's hurting to hear such. And as for the ambassador, where he is staying, he is there. He's the, what is it? He's representing South Africa. He is there as a South African. And if people come to his place in such a dilapidated, is it, I'm using the right English,
yeah,
dilapidated area, really, what kind of reflection are we giving people of other countries when we are saying South Africa is the hope of Africa, but in another foreign country, it doesn't really reflect what is it? Thank you very much, Chair, for going there, and it's painful. It's very painful to hear such things. I don't want to talk about other things, but we'll await for a proper report. And as for corruption, I think it's corruption. It's corruption, and it's happening even here in South Africa. There are so many, many properties that are being really utilized for such kind of, you know, improper utilization of properties that belongs to government. Acting DG, please assist in that. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Aputi, Honorable Maila.
Chair, thanks, Chair. My understanding was that you give us this oral report for meeting so that we can be able to engage with it when it's the well-cooked report, but also
to the reason for the visit. I think it was to guide us on how we engage with Section 8 of the Foreign Service Bill.
Mm.
So I think after we get the report, we'll be able to see how then we engage on that matter.
Mm.
Thanks.
Absolutely spot on. I must just say for the record that the delegation made up of two committees led by Honorable Memezi and myself did a sterling work. It really behaved like a truly one South African delegation. Not tension about who belongs to which committee or who belongs to which party. Something that I also saw when we were a delegation in Angola and other SADC countries, at least so far. I really like it that way, that we should be able, when we are in foreign countries, when we are in New York, when we are in Washington, when we are in the AU, you should see the South Africans, whatever their religion, whatever their political affiliation, whatever soccer club they support. Oh, it's important to support Pirates, but if just in case we don't, we should go there and be seen to be South Africans. And I think it really generates a good respect for the South Africans. That's what I saw in Namibia. I hope to be able to remember to say that to the Joint Committee that good work has been done, if only it can be acted upon. Now, as we step off this item, DG, wouldn't you want to say one or two things?
Well, thanks very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Let me start by conveying our most profound appreciation for taking us into confidence on your mission, your observations, your concerns, and indeed of sharing, giving us a heads up on what you are likely to recommend as a way forward on this. We really appreciate this information. Indeed, the matters you have raised or your observations are matters of concern. They should concern all of us for reasons that have been better articulated by the honorable members, which I do not intend to repeat. We've taken detailed notes of all your comments and observations, I do hope that we will be accorded the possibility to comment and to respond once you have discussed the matter fully as a committee and have made specific recommendations. I have some notes that my colleagues have asked me to talk to clarify certain matters, but I would rather not do that now. We would do that at an appropriate time when as the committee you have reflected on the written report and have made certain recommendations. I think that will be the ideal, the appropriate time for DECO to give its response. But thanks very much for sharing this information. And indeed, as I say, we share your concerns, and we will also bring these to the Honourable Minister and Deputy Ministers and indicate to them that you have expressed a wish to meet with the Minister as soon as possible, so that you can express these matters to her directly. In the meantime, as a department, we'll also do some work in response to these matters. Quite clearly, there are matters that are beyond the province of officials, humble officials like us, and we'll take orders and directives from yourselves as the elected representatives of our people, particularly with respect to the issues of the mandate between Public Works and DECO as it pertains to the management of properties of the Republic beyond its borders. DECO does not have a locus standi on this matter at the moment. Neither do we have the capacity to be able to perform or execute this function. But of course, we were guided by what the executive deems to be appropriate. And if a decision is so decided that this mandate should resort to DECO, we will have to develop the necessary capacity to be able to execute this mandate. If it's so decided that the status quo ante remains, we'll gladly cooperate and support DPW to ensure that it fully executes this mandate. Because indeed we are, at the moment, in terms of our legislative framework, DPW is the landlord and all departments are tenants that occupy office space in buildings that are held in trust by DPW on behalf of the state. So that is the current position. But we'll be guided, of course, by what the members of the executive and yourself as the esteemed representatives of our people in our assembly deemed to be appropriate. Thank you.
Right. The last item is just to deal with the way forward on how things should pan out. From here, next week, and there are officials who must assist that this thing I'm going to talk about happen at the level of my office. The secretary, the content advisor, and the executive secretary, the following way forward, assist me. We must have a joint study group. So you must speak to your counterparts, secretary to committee, secretary to committee, secretary, and a content advisor, perhaps to speak to the, who is the other lady that side?
No,
Langiti, you were together. And then, so that we find time in the venue, and also I'm reminded to speak to my counterpart, Umemez, so that we find time and venue as to where the joint committee is going to sit. And if you heard us with it, Sizohlala as a joint committee, look at the draft report and then adopt it. And then go back to our separate committees and adopt the reports there. Because you can't have a joint report, adopt a joint committee, not adopt a committee itself. Then we must adopt a report at our level as a committee next week. And after that, the report will then be given to the speaker. In fact, it must be accompanied to the speaker by both chairpersons. And the speaker must be walked through the details, speaker, here is the report, we went to Namibia, this is what we saw, etc., etc., etc. And as we take that report to the speaker, we'll also take the report to the minister. It will be same dates, same thing. From the joint committee to the committee, and then from the speaker and to the speaker. And beyond that, and then it will go to the National Assembly. It should go to the it should be debated in the National Assembly after programming would have agreed to it, because we'll then alert the Chief Whip and the Chair of Committees. Then it will be put into the program. It will be debated in the legislature, in the National Assembly, and from there it will be referred by the Speaker to the NCOP. I was told that we must work with speed regarding this matter because the elections are coming next year. So this bill must go to the NCOP. They must also deal with the due consultative processes with regard to the stakeholders, as in provinces, as in departments and whoever. Then it must come back. And then, I don't know, from there, I think it will go to the president for assent, or it will go back to cabinet and cabinet will refer it to the president for assent. If by 2019, before parliament rises, now the last part, is it called rising or it prorogues? I think it prorogues. Before then, the president would have assented to this bill. It would be very good for South Africa. The first legislation on the Foreign Service, and it would have been passed during this term. So this is how things will be happening, and we've got to work meticulously on these things, because unless we took counterpart to Amukonala, we must talk mlomo to mlomo. You know, English can say mouth to mouth, it may mean other things. Mlomo no mlomo, and then she was ukthola izinto zihlale kahle. With that, I think we can step out of this item. The next item is item number 5, which is also the penultimate last item. Is the briefing by the department on its performance. Its performance and financial report, and that of the African Renaissance Fund, its performance and its financial report of the fourth quarter of 2016-17 and 2018 financial year. That is January to end of March. Acting DG, we defer to you, and you can invite whoever is the official that can speak to the item. Over to you.
Well, thanks very much again, Honorable Chairperson, esteemed members of the Committee on International Relations and Cooperation. Chairperson, let me, with your permission, abuse the opportunity to introduce the members of the delegation from the department very quickly, most of whom are known to you. To my left is Ambassador Sally, the Chief Operations Officer, and to his left is Ms. Fadane. She is the acting CFO. Chief Financial Officer. She is sitting on the chair. As you know, there's currently a disciplinary process that is unfolding in the department with regards to the substantive incumbent of that position. To her left is Ms. Tlengiwe Bengu, who is very much known to you, Chief Director of Finance. To her left is Ms. Dolores Otse, also well known to you, Chief Director in charge of Performance, Monitoring and Evaluation. To her left is Ms. Dineo Matlaku, Director for ARF,
who will speak to that part of the
of our presentation. To her left is Ms. Swazi Taitai, Parliamentary Officer of the Department. To her left is Mr. Gideon Labane. He is the Chief Internal Auditor in the Department. To his left is Ms. Mutukanele. She is the Chief Risk Officer. Thanks, Chairperson, for allowing me to dispense with this procedural matter. And let me just say, Chairperson, that in response to your earlier remarks, also convey both the Minister and the Department's appreciation for the support that we receive from the Portfolio Committee under your stewardship, your very inspirational, visionary, and passionate leadership of this committee, with all the esteemed, highly esteemed members who make an invaluable contribution in playing an effective oversight over our work. We really appreciate the rigor and the passion with which you execute your mandate, which has really helped us to identify the shortcomings and also to develop appropriate remedies to the various areas that you've pointed out, but also to constantly seek to improve our performance so that we can indeed fulfill the constitutional, executive and administrative mandate that has been imposed on our department. So we really appreciate this, and we look forward to the usual constructive and positive engagement with yourselves. Chairperson, we were here to brief you on the fourth quarter of the financial year 2017-2018, and our report will strictly focus on the activities as well as the the financial report and information for that period. As you are aware, we are operating under a highly constrained fiscal environment. And indeed, the fourth quarter was not an exception. Due to the economic climate, economic conditions in the country, as well as the pressures on the fiscus, occasioned by numerous factors, in the main, the lower than expected revenue collection, as well as increased expenditure in the public services, particularly what some refer to as the runaway compensation of employees or salaries bill. We've had to institute a number of measures, austerity or cost-cutting measures, to try to remain within the budget that was allocated by the Treasury. Overall expenditure during the period was lower than projected, due to largely two main factors. One is the review of the New York project, following observations of irregularities in terms of how that project was undertaken. Two, non-implementation of some of the ICT projects. As a result of that, we had a lower than expected expenditure of 3% during that quarter. But also of interest to the committee would be the fact that the compensation of employees during this period, as well as in other periods preceding it, and of course in the current period as well, went far beyond the ceiling, in spite of our best efforts of containing expenditure. The salary bill has shot beyond the ceiling. And it's a matter, it's a cause for concern. We'll give you details on this matter as we proceed with the presentation. Chairperson, the period saw the intensification of our foreign policy program, including high-level and structured bilateral engagements with southern, eastern, North African countries, as well as with the Nordic country, Norway. And we were happy to report that during the period under under review, we saw an expansion of trade, as figures will show in a little while. We also saw an expansion of FDI, and indeed an increase in tourist arrivals in South Africa, which is a clear demonstration of the effectiveness of our efforts in various parts of the world in promoting South Africa. We also, during the period under review, undertook a number of efforts to pursue the implementation of the SADC industrialization strategy and plan. In the main, we hosted the SADC Council of Ministers, which was an occasion to undertake a review on efforts of member states to drive this agenda as part and parcel of Agenda 2063 to promote and boost intra-Africa trade, to develop productive economies in Africa, indeed to ensure that we have the necessary supply-side capacity, including infrastructure, energy, transport, in order to be able to beneficiate, to have the capacity to beneficiate our products so that we can engage meaningfully in the global trading system. We also, during the period under review, secured the endorsement by the African Union of our candidature for the UN Security Council non-permanent seat 2019-2020. By acclamation, South Africa was endorsed in January at the AU summit in Addis to become Africa's candidate for the non-permanent seat. And indeed, we are grateful for the efforts that this August committee, as well as the House, also deployed to ensure this resounding mandate. We got 183 votes in the General Assembly in June, and we pay tribute to all your efforts of ensuring that we return to the Security Council with such a strong mandate. Also during the period under review, we signed the Kigali Declaration, signaling our intention to be part of the common market of Africa, indeed to be part of efforts to intensify intra-Africa trade by signing the Kigali Declaration. We laid the basis for our eventual membership of the Continental Free Trade Agreement, which, as you know, we signed in the first quarter of 2018. And the significance of this enterprise is that once it is ratified with all 55 member states of the African Union, it will cover a market of 1.2 billion people, including, of course, a bulging middle class with a voracious appetite for all kinds of consumer goods, with a GDP of more than 3.4 trillion. And indeed, according to figures released by the WTO, this will be the world's largest free trade area since the formation of the World Trade Organization. And in terms of estimates by the Economic Commission of Africa, this will have the potential to boost intra-Africa trade by 52.3%, eliminating import duties and doubling this trade, ensuring that non-tariff barriers are also reduced between countries. So we're very much happy to be alive at a time when the vision that was developed by the founding fathers in 1963 of developing a common African market and of ensuring that African economic integration becomes a reality, that we witness this in our time, and we remain committed to ensure that this process is intensified to the full realization of the Lagos Plan of Action and the Abuja Treaty, so that indeed Africa can become a more than just a viable but a dynamic trading zone where African countries trade amongst themselves like other regions of the world, but also where Africa is able to engage in meaningful trade with the rest of the world, and not just Africa acting as a source of commodities and raw materials, but Africa acting as a manufacturing zone, a manufacturing base that is able to trade value-added products with other continents in the world. We also, during the period under review, engaged in number of activities in preparation for the BRICS summit, the 10th summit of BRICS. We held a Sherpa's meeting, which was a building block towards the one of the building blocks towards the 10th BRICS summit that was hosted successfully in Johannesburg last month. We will report, of course, at the appropriate time when we are instructed to do so by the committee on the outcomes of the BRICS summit. But we thought we should mention that as a precursor to the summit, a number of activities took place, including the Sherpa's meeting that was held during the period under review. Then lastly, Chair, we also, during the period under review, used the ARF, African Renaissance Fund, one of the key instruments of South Africa's soft power, indeed an instrument of foreign policy. We deployed this facility and the resources resident within it to promote democracy, good governance, provide humanitarian and economic assistance, and also help to build capacity on the continent. All the efforts that we have deployed in this regard are highly appreciated and continue to raise the profile and the image of South Africa. They continue to ensure that South Africa is able to project this soft power in ways that help to raise its stature and to affirm its commitment to Pan-Africanism, its commitment to playing a key role in promoting peace, development, and prosperity on the African continent. Chairperson, with those words, I seek your indulgence in inviting my colleagues then to take us through the details of the briefing, and I'll ask the acting CFO, is it you or is it Dolores? Okay. I'll ask Dolores Kotse, Ms. Kotse, who will be followed by Ms. Matlaku, to take us through the presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Honourable Chairperson. Thank you so much, Ambassador Nkosi. Good morning, Honourable Members. We having our quarter one. We then look at our quarter one report, and we will indicate our performance information as was requested by the committee, as well as our financial report. We're also presenting our quarter four report at the time when we've already received our annual financial statements and our audit outcome for the year 17-18. So we will just give the committee a short briefing in terms of what's expected when we come to table our annual report. When we then look at our Program 1 performance against the set targets that we have, quarter 4. When we look at our Program 1 performance for quarter 4, we will see that in terms of our achievement, there were three targets that we did not achieve. It was the first one that relates to the compliance on the 30-day payment period, and here is that we have a 99.3%, and it was basically because we have delays in the verification of invoices, because we want to make sure by the time that we pay the invoices that the services were delivered as per the request. The second one relates to a target that we've set because we want to integrate our electronic systems, our FASAL, our Logos, BUS, our Mission Cashbook, and all our systems. And so ICT has set a target for itself to look at some work business case analysis and ICT gap analysis. This work, unfortunately, the department could not complete because National Treasury issued an instruction, note number 5, to indicate that departments need to just hold on the development of such a system as there is a national system that Treasury is developing on. And then with regard to one of our core programs, which is Program 2, our strategic objective relates particularly to initiatives, activities that we will undertake to strengthen our political relations, our economic relations, as well as our social relations. And here it is also to then make sure that we drive our domestic agenda. So for this period under review, we then look at what we've done in terms of our structured bilateral mechanisms, as well as our high-level visits, as well as the work that has been done at our missions. When we look at our structured bilateral mechanisms and our high-level visits, this relates particularly that what is it that we can drive in terms of our national interest, and then also in terms of our tourism figures or the work that's being done by our missions. This is where our missions are being the eyes and the ears of the department or South Africa abroad. Here we work in collaboration with partner departments. So, for example, if the missions have tourism activities that they undertake, where we do not have brand SA tourism, the Department of Tourism, much of this work is being done by the department. However, in instances where we do have, we will work with them. The same happens with the DTI. We do not have DTI officials everywhere. So, for example, some of our trade and investment seminars will be then run by the department. In some instances, we will support the outward selling missions of the DTI, and in some missions, we do have DTI representatives. So this is in collaboration with other departments. Our missions will then also engage with our Chamber of Commerce to look at market access for particular products, to look at what are the restrictions for certain products. They will identify certain government ministries that they will meet with in order to discuss possible cooperation, knowledge exchange, skills exchange, and so forth. And all of this has contributed, not solely responsible because we're working with our partners, and resulted in a 5.12 billion of export of sales value added products, as well as 2.7 million tourist arrivals, and of course our interest would be the tourist spend, which is 20.7. The figures on tourists comes from SA Statistics, and the figures on the trade comes from DTI. With regard to regional integration, we didn't have a target for quarter four. However, in our capacity as chair of SADC, we had a SADC ministerial that took place in order to prepare and make sure that for the handing over that has happened yesterday between our minister and the Minister of Foreign Affairs of Namibia for the handing over of the SADC chair, and of course, and at summit it will going to happen. And then we have the SADC double troika EU ministerial dialogue, which was a transfer, not a transfer, a postponement from quarter three. It was a quarter three target, and it was then achieved in quarter four. And then with regard to Program 4, our Program 4, our Global Governance, Continental Cooperation, South-South and North-South, we did not have a target for North-South. Our South-South target here particularly, our not achieved, relates to the work that we had to do at an interdepartmental level for our BRICS. and as well as the one not achieved relates to the African Regional Center Local Steering Committee, because the non-permanent domicile for the African Regional Bank has already been established, so that committee did not meet during this period. Then if we're looking at some of the detail with regard to our global governance, is the fact I've just tried to highlight some of the aspects that, because when we look at our continental and global governance, is that we need to be at the table, to be at certain meetings, to then negotiate and advance and influence and advance South Africa's positions. So if we look at the 37th Human Rights Council that took place during this reporting period, one of the resolutions and initiatives that South Africa advanced was particularly around good governance and the promotion and the protection of human rights. Then, with the 56th session of the United Nations Commission for Social Development, we're looking particularly at the draft resolution that South Africa has also promoted, strategies for the eradication of poverty to achieve sustainable development for all. When we're looking at the UN Special Committee on Peacekeeping, of course, peace being central to what we want to achieve, and because it's a forerunner and a basic requirement for sustainable development. We're looking at South Africa, they negotiated on behalf of NAM and advocated for adequate and sustainable resources and the fulfillment of peacekeeping mandates. With regard to the continental cooperation, Ambassador Nkosi already alluded to some of the issues that we have lobbied for and that we were successful, for example, at the AU summit in January, we've asked for support, and we got our support on the candidatures for the UNSC, as well as for the Commission on the Status of Women and the Council of International, the ITU. Then we're looking at, of course, the Kigali Summit in March was an extraordinary summit to discuss the Continental Free Trade Agreement. At that point in time, due to certain issues within the CFTA and certain domestic issues that need to be clarified, our president only signed the Kigali Declaration. Subsequent, we've signed it at the latest AU summit that was outside this reporting period. With regard to Program 4, we then look at our public diplomacy and our state protocol. There was only one target that we have not achieved on Program 4, and it's a public participation program. However, our target for the year has been achieved. It was only that it happened earlier in the year, and it didn't happen during this period. So what is the content of those targets that we're talking about? Of course, our public diplomacy, we spoke about at length at this particular committee before, and it refers to our media briefings. We're looking at our media statements, meaning all the platforms that's being used by the department to make sure that our domestic audiences as well as our international audiences are informed about the situation. So our media statements that we will issue, so there was a media statement yesterday when our minister, for example, handed over the chair of SADC to the Namibian minister. So that's what we're talking about. In some instances, we also then write certain opinion pieces that are published, and then we also have the Ubuntu magazine that is distributed to external stakeholders, the internal department, and then we also have an electronic newsflash that we distribute to the department as well. With regard to state protocol services, what we have is that the Vienna Convention, as well as the Domestic Act, the Diplomatic Immunities and Privileges Act, requires that South Africa needs to or is mandated to deliver certain services. And with regard to those services, would be, for example, the diplomatic accreditation of the diplomatic corps when they come into South Africa, so the issuing of diplomatic IDs. Then we have a passport policy for diplomatic who is entitled to, and then, of course, our protocol services will issue state diplomatic passports. So that's the work that's been rendered. And then lastly, with regard to our state protocol, is the consular. And then with regard to the last item in terms of Program 4 is our consular services. And here particularly, it's the services that is being rendered by South African citizens abroad. So meaning if we have South African traveling, they lose their travel documents, then they would go into the mission, and then they would ask for emergency passports and so forth. And then, of course, there are other issues. So citizens in distress, any abductions, for example. We have lots of South Africans in prisons abroad, and where the budget allows, because we also have that kind of constraint. They will then visit some of those prisoners, and that becomes the link to the South African family here. And then we have a walk-in service at DIRCO as well. Those are for people that want to travel abroad and that need certain documents, South African documents, whether it be a marriage certificate, whether it be a matric certificate and so forth, legalized, so that when they go abroad, it is then seen as an authentic South African document. So that walk-in service, we have a DIRCO, and for this period, we have legalized 15,000 documents. So, Honorable Chairperson, if you'll allow me, I will then finalize and then hand over to the financial performance that then allowed us to actually do this performance information and deliver according to our targets. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you, Acting DG.
Thank you. Over to you, Ma'am, Acting CEO. CFO. Is it Acting?
Yes.
Over to you, Ma'am.
Thank you, Honourable Member. The first part will be done by my colleague, Ms. Bengu, and then I will come in at the end.
Okay, Ms. Bengu.
Thank you, Honourable Member, and thank you, Acting CFO. I'll take you through from slide number 19, where we have outlined our financial reports for quarter four. As Ambassador Nkosi has indicated earlier on, the department has underspent its projected budget for quarter four by 3.3%. As indicated again, even though we have underspent by 3.3%, you will see there on compensation of employees, there is a noticeable overspending of about 3.1%. That 3.1% is as a result of the compensation of employees ceiling that has been introduced by National Treasury, which was way lesser than the headcount of the department or the wage bill of the department. Hence, we have overspent the budget. But just to indicate as well to the honourable members that the department did implement some measures to try and remain within the ceiling. One of them was to release about 472 locally recruited personnel during the period 16-17 and 17-18 financial year. And we also froze 55 transferred posts of South Africans abroad, about 55 of them. At least with those two initiatives, the department managed to bring down the wage bill by 700 million, but over and above this, we were unable to remain within. The CFO will cover other measures that we are putting in place for the year 18-19, which in those measures, it includes the realignment of the departmental structure, but she will go into details to that. On goods and services, you will also notice that the department has underspent again by 1.6% of the budget that was indicated there, which I will cover again, but at a high level to indicate again what what Ambassador Ngosi indicated. There are two major things that did not happen there. One of them is the non-implementation of the ICT project that was projected to be implemented in the year 17-18. And the other one, as you see, on payment of capital assets, this is where the department underspent its budget by 71.2%. Now, Ambassador Ngosi also touched on this matter. In this case, it's because of there is a project of acquisition of land in New York, which the department has started with it, but the process has to be halted simply because when the process was looked at by Auditor General, it was found that the department did not comply with some supply chain management processes, and the department is in the process of investigating that. However, the intention to proceed with the acquisition of land in New York is still on the table for the department. As a result, the amount that was not spent in the year 17-18 has been requested to be rolled over to finalize the acquisition of land. If I move over to slide number 21, in terms of the financial reports, you will see there it's program number one, which is mainly the support function of the department administration, which then also underspend its budget in totality by 11.6%. You will notice there under foreign fixed asset management, that is where we have budgeted for the acquisition of land, you will see that there was an underspending of about 84.5%, which is what has caused the department to underspend drastically in its budget. If I move over to slide number 24 in this case, I would like then to look at, can I take you back to slide number 23. I just give something important there. On slide number 23, as we indicated, the underspending by the department, which was simply because of the project in New York, as well as the non-payment of the ICT, non-implementation of the ICT. But what I wanted to bring to the attention of the honorable members is the main cost drivers in this program, which is the support program. One of them is the finance lease payment of the department, where we pay about 258 million per year, and it's a lease, or it's a triple P lease of 25 years, and we are currently in year 9, and we still have about 16 years to go in that one. We also have computer services for both head office and mission. This is the bandwidth that we utilize, and we spend about 88 million over a year in that one. We also have operating leases for the state protocol lounges. We also have Pan African Parliament, which we pay around 32 million in terms of the rental there. We also have paying for the United Nations rental in that one, around about 16 million. And all in all, the state protocol lounges, Pan-African Parliament, and then the United Nations and the NIPAD as well, what we pay around is about 91 million as indicated in the slide. Then on slide number 24, you will notice again the department was unable, had spent almost 100% of its budget with over about 0.9%. In that program, again, what I indicated in the beginning, we still had a problem around the compensation of employees because of the ceiling, which was lesser than the wage bill of the department. Now, our overspending there was 0.8%. And then on the goods and services, we spend almost everything that was in the budget. Then if I move over to slide number 25, I would like to highlight the main cost drivers in this program, which is program number two, which is our international relations, where most of our core function of the department, or where the bilateral relations are being dealt at. One of the things that is a cost driver is the compensation of employees. As you know, that the department is personnel driven. And those compensation of employees relate to the allowances that are paid to our transferred officials abroad. It also relates to the salaries and wages paid to our locally recruited personnel abroad. One of the main cost drivers as well in this program is operating leases, because we need offices and we also need residential areas for the colleagues that are posted abroad. And what we are spending around in that operating lease for the year, we spend about 750 million rand. Hence, we are looking at the acquisition of land in New York to try and bring down the 758 million that we are paying for our operating leases. One of the things as well is the educational allowances which is paid in relation to transfer staff abroad. Together with that also we have foreign municipalities that we paid. These are your utilities for the properties that we are renting and owning abroad. And those utilities, they normally come at around about 124 million per year. If I move over to Program 3 is international cooperation, which we call normally in the department is our global governance program. This is the program where, again, we managed to spend the money that was projected in the quarter four. However, if you look again on the compensation of employees, this is one area, again, where the department could not spend within the allocated budget due to the ceiling that has been implemented because the wage bill is higher than the ceiling. The other area where you will see there is a noticeable underspending on goods and services in that program of about 45.1%. You will recall my colleague, Ms. Dolores Gotze, indicated there when she was indicating on the performance that this this program, there were about three targets that were not met, and you could see also in the financial reports, it also reflecting in the financial reports. Those three programs involved the participation in the ACP, as well as the BRICS. Even though the SHEPA did take place, the SHEPA meetings did take place, but there were other BRICS meetings that were planned, like the interministerial committee that did not take place, and also the interdepartmental meetings that did not take place. So these were the also causes of the underspending in that program. If I move over to slide number 27, slide number 27, I would also like to highlight the main cost drivers, honorable members. Again, this program is also one of our core program in the department, where it's also personnel driven. As you see, the main cost drivers are our cost of living, it's the allowances paid to our transfer staff abroad. It's also salaries that are paid to locally recruited. I've already alluded to the operating leases, educational allowance, and the foreign municipalities. Then I will move over to Program 5. This is State Protocol and Public Diplomacy. In terms of, which is slide number 28, in terms of the spending there, we have spent, according to the projections, compensation of employees, because this is this one, we managed to spend what was allocated in that one. And also in goods and services, we managed to spend everything that was planned then. In slide number 29, we wanted to highlight to the members basically what are the main cost drivers again in this program, which is State Protocol and Public Diplomacy. One of the main cost drivers is travel and subsistence expenditure in relation to state and official visits abroad, because this is a program that supports the principals in terms of protocol services and as well as in terms of public diplomacy services that we render. The other main cost driver is the municipal services for embassies stationed in South Africa as per the host country agreement that we are paying in the department. I'll move over to slide number 30, which talks to international transfers. These are the transfers that we pay in terms of the membership contribution to the AU, to the African Union, to the United Nations, to SADC, to IPSA, to NIPAD, to Commonwealth Nations, just to mention the few, or to mention the ones that we pay a little bit higher than the rest. In this quarter, what we have projected was 324, and we managed to spend about 95%. And if you look at slide number 31, that's where we are indicating that due to the favorable rent, or due to the favorable foreign exchange in the last quarter, because these membership contributions are paid in different foreign currencies, so the rand was stronger in terms of our budget rates. As a result, that is where we have seen some forex gains or forex, yes, forex gains in that relation. Again, the African Union, if I can just highlight what we are paying there for the year 17-18, we paid something around about 227 million. For IPSA, we paid something like 15.9 million. SADC, we paid 97 million. UN, we paid 180 million. NIPAD, 7.7 million. And the Commonwealth, we paid about 11.7 million. Thank you very much, Honorable Member. I'll hand over to the CFO.
Thank you, Ms. Bengu. Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Member, Acting DG and colleagues, as indicated by my colleague Dolores, that we come in to report the fourth quarter at a time when we have already finalized the financial year and we have received the Auditor General's report. We felt it is important that we just touch base on that area just to prepare, just to inform you that when we come, we'll go into details. But what we wanted to highlight is the fact that by the end of the financial year, we the department...
Chair, can I, on a point of order, can I request that we get that list of the contributions? Yeah.
Okay, thank you. The department has managed to spend 93.6% of its budget, and this is, as was indicated earlier, mostly attributable to the fact that the New York project, together with the ICT project, could not be finalized as was planned for the past financial year. And then in terms of the audit report, it is said to inform you that we have received a qualified audit report, which means we have regressed because in the previous financial year we had received an unqualified audit report. The main issue that resulted into this is what the chairperson, Honorable Chairperson, indicated earlier when he was addressing us on the recent visit to Namibia, although it's not specifically in Namibia, but it's around asset management. In the previous years, you will recall that we were struggling with the AG around the issues of heritage assets. We were able to overcome that, but unfortunately, the issues of completeness, existence, and inconsistencies in our asset register resulted to us receiving qualified audit. The other material factors that affected our report were the expenditure management. The acting DG indicated earlier in his presentation that the New York project, one of the reasons why it was halted is because there were some irregularities that were picked up in the procurement process of that of the land in New York that resulted in us having to report it as irregular. There are others as well that includes the contracts that I have expired but we still receive services. The consequence management was another area where we were really beaten by Auditor General. But what having received the report with the leadership of the acting DG, we have set and developed a turnaround strategy in order for us to address all these issues that have made us to regress. We have specifically looked at what we could be doing around the asset management turnaround. We have identified our own weaknesses over and above what the Auditor General has picked up as findings. We have also gone and introspect in our area. The internal weaknesses we've identified, and we are putting measures in place to address those. And we have already started the process. We have the short-term, medium, and long-term processes, which includes us reviewing the actual asset management unit so that it can address these problems. We are going to be coming back to the committee when the time is right, and we will give updated a progress in what we have done on the action plan. We have developed an action plan which is based on the findings of the Auditor General together with our internal audit and risk management. We are reviewing and we are monitoring that process. One of the key things that we've made, we are changing in this financial year is that this action plan will be definitely under the control or watch of the highest levels in the department. It's going to be reported on weekly at our main top, which is the meeting that is chaired by our minister, and it's also going to be monitored at every meeting that the acting DG is chairing. So those are some of the actions that we put in place in order to make sure that we get to where the department is supposed to be. That is clean audit. Thank you, Chair.
Ms. Matlako.
Thank you, Acting DG. Thank you, Chairperson. We are presenting the report of the African Renaissance Fund for the fourth quarter, the performance information and the financial information. On page four, we'll start with the strategic objectives of the ARF, and these are strategic objectives are outlined in the African Renaissance and International Cooperation Fund Act and guide the work that we do. They are to promote democracy and good governance, to contribute to human resource development, to support socioeconomic development and integration, to provide humanitarian assistance, to support cooperation between South Africa and other countries, and to develop post-conflict, to contribute to post-conflict reconstruction and development. Moving on to page six, the quarter one performance information. The first performance indicator on the requests that were received by and considered by the ARF Advisory Committee. The Advisory Committee received five requests in the period that were considered. Of the five requests, the first one, training of VIP Presidential Protection Unit of Central African Republic, was approved by the Minister of DERCO and the Minister of Finance. And the other four project proposals are still under consideration by the ARF Advisory Committee for recommendation to the ministers. Moving on to page seven. The indicators by objective for democracy and good governance, we continue to support election observer missions on the continent and also the Liberian election that was held last year. And moving on to page eight. For humanitarian assistance, we continue to support the drought relief project in Namibia, which is progressing well. About over 40 boreholes have already been equipped, and hopefully in the 18-19 financial year, the project will be completed. We processed a payment for $11.2 million in solidarity with the people of Palestine, for the women and children in Gaza, and we also processed a payment of $17 million for the emergency food assistance in Swaziland. We also did capacity building for Burundian diplomats who were in South Africa for training. And we continued with the Cuban economic package, where 2.7 million was processed. And just on page 9, the non-achievement on project progress reports for active projects, it was for the projects in Palestine, where at the time where the payment was processed, there was conflict in Gaza, and the oversight visit was then put on hold. And moving over to the financial report on page, slide 10, the ARF in the as of 31 March 2017 had a surplus of 653 million. And for the 17-18 financial year, there were projects approved for 42 million. And as at 31 March, as the year closed, the ARF is sitting with a surplus of 623 million, which is sitting with National Treasury awaiting approval for retention. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Acting CG.
So we're done. We can invite comments. Acting CG, I just heard you saying the NEO you were referring to. We have, in case of battle. In case of a battle of the Dineos, we have enough, we can outwit you. Honorable Mayela. Okay, let me note all the hands. Honor Maila, Raputi, you'll come last. Mkhalapa kana kwa Mkhalapa. Kalyan, Honorable Lisoma. Yes, in that order. Tete Maila, you are a fool of us.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. And let me start by appreciating the presentations, firstly by the acting DG and the other colleagues. In as much as Ambassador Ngozi commended the committee for South Africa's candidature of the Security Council, I would also like to commend DERCO for the sterling work that is being done. It's really commendable, and we really appreciate. Now, coming to the report, Chair, on I think it's slide 13, where we talk of South Africa signing the Kigali Declaration as a precursor to signing the Agreement on the African Continental Free Trade Area. I just want to check, of all the member states, how many so far have signed the Kigali Declaration? And if we were to project, when can we say likely, when likely can the AFCFTA be signed and be operational? Now, I think it's on slide 20, if I'm not mistaken. there is this thing of the underspending due to acquisition of land, and there are also ICT issues. And I just want to get an understanding of what is actually happening. You see, in my mind, I see New York as a very congested area. Is there really land in New York? Because sometimes it baffles me when we are saying we are going to acquire land in New York. New York is not like Polokwane, where you will have free stands. Can you just go to town and explain to us what exactly is happening here? Now, there is also this issue of compensation of employees, which is lesser than the headcount. I want you to put it in simple terms. What do you actually mean? Do you have ghost workers? Are there people who you are paying who are not in the payroll? What is actually happening for the compensation of employees not to be on par with the headcount? Now, on slide 34, on the audit outcome, this is where I'm really concerned. You know, and my worry here is that the DG is not here to actually account. And as I was listening to Ambassador Nkosi, he said something like the DG was only convalescing. Means he's no longer sick. He's just he's trying to
a diplomatic term.
Yeah. No. So I think it's the DG should come back to work. He must not convalesce. If he's not sick, he must come back to work. Because we need him to account. You see, there is an issue here, which is somewhere they are saying in the next slide that you are developing a comprehensive audit action plan, and the draft will be ready for submission to the DG. We want the DG to tell us about the action plan. We don't want to hear this. He's conferencing and then he's waiting for the action plan. No, you must come back to it. I think it's important. Now, on this issue of the assets, this is not the first time that the department is receiving a negative audit outcome because of the assets. I'm not talking about the heritage assets here. I'm talking about these assets. It says here, assets are not physically verified. Why? Is it by omission? Is it by intent? Who would have done that? There's the issue of consequence management. Ambassador Nkosi said the disciplinary case of the CFO is on. Can we be taken into confidence? Because the disciplinary process is not open-ended. It must have a start and a finish. Sometimes people just go free because of technicalities. How far are we with this process? We would like to be told on that. I asset registers provided are not consistent and no valid explanation are provided for the discrepancies. Why? Why should it be like this? If we are going to do an action plan today, and if we compare the issues today and the issues which were raised around 2015, are they not the same issues? So we are going to redo what we did before we got a better outcome the previous financial year. So it means we move one step forward and then we move two steps backward. Why should we do that? I think personally I'm very concerned about this development. Now on the ARF, I would like to know how far are we in making SATPA to be realized? And however, I would like to commend you for the humanitarian projects, especially for the one in Palestine. I think you are doing quite a good job. Chair, that's my.
Thank you very much, Honorable Maila Wanaulma Raputi.
Yeah, I really want to thank the presentation and even the background that was given by the acting director general. It was really inspiring, you know, really coming with all the chronological kind of, you know, overview. Really is applauded. And I just wish that the youth can be able to hear how you articulated your overview. Thank you very much. It was really inspiring. Slide 5, whereby on the invoices, you don't have any protocols in relation of paying on verification of those invoices, because it also make a dent on your performance. Where are you having any measurements to cap that those issues? Because I think verifying of invoices should be a challenge, especially when you are dealing with suppliers. Why now you should go and really they should waste your time in that regard. I'm also sharing some sentiments with Dr. Maila on the issues of asset management, page 34. Asset management, we got the background from Windhoek. If the auditors can hear about the issues of Windhoek, I think you're going to get 0-0. It's appalling. Something is not right. I'm sorry to say that, Chair. So it means that we must put our house in order. And I'm saying that why should be only administrators that are suffering? Why ambassadors? What are the ambassadors doing? If ever, I really don't know. Are we doing the right thing whilst we are having this Windhoek issue on issues of asset management? We heard last year that you have solved an expert that expect and how much is he getting to assist put things into perspective? You did solve an expect. So it means that the Department of International Relations, there is a big gap. And even cutting people to work in overseas, I think really it was really premature. Because we cannot deal with assets. But I'm asking myself, what do ambassadors do on that on day-to-day basis? This is, I think, it will be 5 years. I'll be 5 years in this parliament next year. So that this is the third qualified audit. I think, comrades, friendly. It is really displeasing. It's painful. But the good news is this: with the African renaissance, the soft power, the tact of diplomacy. I think I like my Africa. Africa. They say Africa solutions for Africa problems, and that kind of diplomacy that we are instilling in Africa, we are going in the right direction as the hope of Africa. And I'm happy my namesake Dineo, talent, you are doing exceedingly exceptionally well as a diplomat, with using your soft power in that regard. I think you, that Nkosi, being a woman, she needs, you must give her a hand of applause. And it's a woman's month. Yeah. The diplomacy. And it was part of our assignment. I wish I could have told you. The soft power. Amanda.
But, Honorable Neo, but we are referring only to the Neo that frightened. You want an applause. My wife is not, was not included in this.
Which one?
In this, the Neo thing.
No, he knows.
And now, only later, you said about Mama, now oh, she's Mama. In. Now we can clap hands. No, it's on a light note. Mkhalapa?
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, you would recall that about 3 or 4 years ago, we created the post called the COO.
Mm.
And I think the problem is that perhaps the job description of the COO was not clearly defined in order to address some of these things. Because if you recall, the issue was that the then Director General would not be able to deal with these soft issues which need details. In terms of asset registration and all those fiduciary duties. And we have created that post for that purpose. And 4 years down the line, we're still finding the same problem that we created that post for. So I can accept that it's work in progress. You know, it's not something that you overturn overnight. It's not an event, it's a process. But I see the regression moving forward. And that is my concern, because if you look at all these audit outcomes and the audit opinions that we've been, it's been serial things that we have tried to arrest when we created the COO position. I think perhaps Ambassador Sally can assist us as the COO to say what is it that he has been doing in order to mitigate some of these factors, because we are working retrospectively here. We have conservative qualified audit opinions on same serial issues. and I don't see movement. And I need to commend the department for the suspension or disciplinary case against the chief financial officer. But this matter must come to finality. I've always called him the elephant in the room, and every time we are dilly-dallying in terms of legal semantics, we need to deal with this one this way, we need to deal with it this way. And I put a challenge to the Minister of the Budget Voters, deal with this matter once and for all. So again, I'm going to ask the same question I've been asking. What is the status with the CFO? Is he kicked out, kicking and screaming, or is that process finalized? Because if we cannot be sitting here with annual financial statements, we cannot have irregular, fruitless, wasteful expenditures and procurement and contract management issues. Those are the issues that fall in the lap of the CFO. So where are we in terms of that process? And perhaps in the same light, can you explain in detail what is the problem with the New York issue? We're saying there has been irregularities. What type of irregularities? Can we be detailed and specific in terms of those irregularities in New York? Because I can tell you now it's going to be one of the audit outcomes that we're going to get. And as I said, we are working retrospectively, not working progressively, because of we're still dealing with things and issues way back. So the audit outcomes and the what the department's response is, it's found wanting. And we can't say our overall financial performance and underspending is due to ICT projects. We've been talking about ICT for most years. I mean, I've been a member of this committee since 2010, and I've been hearing this thing like a broken record. So we cannot put this as an explanation. And with what we saw again in Canada, it's not surprising that this ICT is still a problem, because we found that our ICT infrastructure is found wanting. So that is very much unacceptable, Chair, and we would want to to also request that list of funding of international transfers that we are making. Can I also ask in terms of the new Kagame report of the revised AU funding model, where are we in terms of that? Is it still with Treasury? And what is the view of Treasury in terms of the revised funding model? And what are we paying on at the moment? And I think if you look at the program of international relations, it just goes into what I've always been calling for and what is Treasury also saying in terms of regionalization of our missions. I mean, the cost drivers is the COLA. And LRPs and as well as foreign municipalities payments for properties. I mean, spending 124 million only on paying for rates and taxes. What about the rental bills that we have? So it doesn't give us much leeway to move, you know, even though it is, of course, a political question that I'm asking, but, you know, in terms of real logic, we can see the cost drivers are clearly, they show that it's a question of rationalization of the missions, because all those cost drivers are quite very much heavy, and overspending of employees, which is what is the problem at the moment with the department. So, Chair, in terms of the, I see here in international relations there was a 6 high-level engagement, and I see there were very interesting engagements that were taken here. Can I ask the 6 high-level engagement that were undertaken, what was the outcomes of the Morocco engagement? in particular. Because we have an embassy there that is there that is just lying shallow and unused. And as part of the cost drivers, perhaps maybe the engagement were about diplomacy between South Africa and Morocco. So can I find that? Let me also commend the department for trying to put value for money in terms of saying this 30 meetings, what yielded from those 30 meetings, because I was, and I'm not always interested in the number of visits that are done. I'm interested in the value that comes out of those visits. Did we go there and have economic diplomacy? So I see we're trying to align. When we say the tier level meetings and then there was 2.7 tourist arrival, which might be the tourism promotion, and the 5.1 billion of export sales, which is a good start of where we're going, but we need to do more. We cannot have this so many meetings and just bring in 5 billion. That's the amount we spent for 22 trade and investment engagement and 30 meetings with high-level potential investors and 32 meetings with targeted government ministers and 33 meetings with chambers of commerce and 27 promotion meetings. If you combine, if I ask a parliamentary question to get the value of how much we spend out of all these trips, it will maybe outweigh, it will be far much costly. So we got to look at the issue of value for money. What does all these meetings bring in terms of value for money to South Africa? In simple terms, it's about the strength of our economic diplomacy. And if we are engaging strongly on economic diplomacy. Chair, let me go to the African Renaissance. Remember we said we want to do a follow the money program to see whether all these things that we have put in the money in for are being followed through and they are being, there is monitoring and evaluation. We were given an indication that indeed there is that following. Can I ask the Burundi diplomatic training, isn't it something that can be done through our diplomatic training branch rather than making it an African Renaissance issue? And the other one is the Cuba economic package. We were told that Cuba has paid back the money that we lend them. Now we are still doing an economic package for them. Unless I'm missing something, because the amount that we lended Cuba, they paid it back, and we applauded them for paying us the money, unless it was playing javelin. You throw it and you run, you catch it the other side. They pay us back and then we pay them again. So it might be an accounting game of where we're just clearing the books. So just explain to me, why do we still have a Cuba economic package project while they have already paid back the money? Because if they pay back the money, it means they are able to sustain themselves. And in terms of the projects, I don't see, or if I can ask, what has been the assistance to Sahrawi, to Western Sahara, because if I see we were doing some programs here. And the reason why I'm asking that is, you remember, Chair, when we had the forum for Western Sahara, there were things that we promised the Western Sahara people, and we haven't done them. So in throwing money at the ocean, why don't we look at a tangible, specific program that we can sponsor for the Western Sahara? And can I also ask, in terms of this AU election observation, is it a blanket for all the observation missions that are coming for all the elections within SADC as well, with particular reference to the DRC? Will there be any election support for the DRC, and if we know,
how much will it be? Lastly, the training of VIP Presidential Protection Unit of Central African Republic. The last time I checked, when we went to Car, we caused there was a civil war there with our soldiers being shot. Now we're doing this the training for the Central African Republic. How does it work? We disperse funding to the VIP unit and then they do the training, or we're doing the training for ourselves. I don't see how that is economy, it's diplomacy. You know, unless I might be missing the context and I'm just looking at the content of training of VIP Presidential Protection Unit. You know, if you were saying to me we were training peace officers, that's something else. But the training of a VIP Presidential Protection Unit for one person, the president, who might cause another tension and violence there. So I'm not quite sure about that, and I would want an explanation. Why would we engage in such frivolous training for a VIP presidential? If it was peace officers, it's something else. But just to protect one person, it's just something else. But Chairperson, thank you very much for your indulgence.
Thank you, Honorable Mkhala.
Because we don't want cool.
Honorable Kalyan.
Thank you, Chairperson. You know, I have a different view on, and this is not offensive, on applauding a woman because she's in a position and a job. We must treat each other as equals, men and women. It's quite, a put down to compliment a woman because she's a woman and she's doing a good job. Compliment her because she's doing a good job, full stop. I'm not into this feminist nonsense and Women's Month and all that. We're here because we have a job to do and we are regarded as equals. And we are competent and we're here on merit, not because we're just women. So that's my point of view, and it's a personal one. So the asset management unit seems to be a disaster. I would like to know who oversees this unit. In other words, which structure of the department it would fall under. Is there a deputy DG or whoever? How many people are in this unit? And what is the reason for non-performance? Because it is not doing the job it is set out to do. So I want to know, are there vacancies there? This unit has been set up. How many people exist and who oversees it? Then, with regard to the presidential VIP unit, at whose request was the training done? Why is the budget coming out of DECO? Why does it not come out of the president's budget or parliament's budget? And how many people were trained? How long did it take to train them? What is the cost? The specific cost for it, did it include hiring consultants, accommodation, all of that? Have we done this before? Is there a precedent? So if there's another country that feels it needs its presidential unit to be upskilled, are we going to be considering that? Is this what we call skill sharing? I'm not sure. With regard to the Pan-African Parliament, so it's a mess. We pay 32 or 33 million rand in rental. What is happening to the new building? I've been there now. This is my 10th year as a member of the Pan-African Parliament. From the time I got there,
there was always this understanding that Gallagher Estate was just to be temporary, you know. So I don't know, this 32 million is still enriching the president of this country because he's got partnerships there in Gallagher Estate. Is there a reason why we are continuing to pay the rent and not building the new building? If a site has been sourced, what is the problem? So we fund cars and luxury cars. The president doesn't want to have a E-class or a C-class, he wants an F-class. How many cars do we sponsor for each sitting? Because I've just finished there now 2 weeks at the Pan-African Parliament. I'm amazed to see a translator driving a diplomatic car. So how can that be? And you know, it's got the diplomatic number plate, D. So I was observing, and then I asked, I said, but this person is a translator. Why does he need a diplomatic car? So I'd like to know also, the Pan-African Parliament will be sitting in Kigali in the next sitting in October. So how, what is DIRCO's responsibility then if the president decides to go and have it in another country and that country hosts the sitting, who then pays for the translation and all the other little things that not little, the big things that we pay for? What are the cost implications? Is there a saving if another country hosts? I will rest there for now. Thank you.
President Honorable Kalia. So are you done?
Yes.
Honorable Soma.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. One will raise issues, but noting that we are dealing with the year that was.
Honorable.
After.
Okay. After Lisoma.
Which one will seek to get a sense of comfort that within the current year, when it closes then, some challenges would have been addressed so that we go back to our good 2 years back clean audit reports as expected. Because 92 or 99% performance, we all expect 100%. Humanly, then you can forgive the 1%, but there's that expectation from even from the taxpayers, which are all of us, we are, and the people that we account to. Chair, I'm not going to count, I'll just raise the issues because I might miss my calculation. In terms of buying, I will make a reference to the New York project that is underway in terms of buying land and also acquiring a building there. Notwithstanding what has been said, that we've got this project, but in terms of our departmental operations, we are legally, in terms of Guyama and in terms of the under-resource or capabilities as the department, we are unable to take care of all these other commissions that we have throughout the world, so to speak. So what are the plans to ensure that we don't continuously have in the same state of the dilapidated areas, or we only choose the African state or what? And what informs that? But probably can be answered in the next meeting, but I'm just raising that so that you can think of that. In the absence of what is the bill that we are busy with as the Portfolio Committee, because the New York one and the other challenges have been there even before that. Obviously, as a technocrats, you would have had plans to say, how do we then, without going to those countries, to make sure that there is on-site checking that there is maintenance and all that. On a lighter note, which I should have said earlier, or that I was so taken back that I wanted to take that TV from the ambassador, His Excellency Ambassador Whitehead, yes, that one those old ones, which was not even working, my dear. So, but the issue that I'm raising in reference to that is the issue of clear, well-known standards. That if we know, like when we went there, just making a reference as well, in terms of the standards. You go to Chinese embassy, you could see that there's a standard in all countries. With us, there's that disjunction. But I'm saying that in relation to moving forward also, that with New York, are we going to do that, or what would be informing, whatever it may be, positively or negatively? Two, Chair. Which is good that we are paying for municipal services to all countries. But how do you justify paying for the services for the properties that are unoccupied, let alone they don't exist? And how many of those in other countries? So I'm raising these things with and hope that when we're dealing with the, we'll be looking at the second quarter of 1819, we'll be able to talk to that, to give the portfolio committee and the South Africans a sense of comfort that we are really addressing the issue. Because it cannot be an excuse, let me quickly say this, Chair, it cannot be an excuse that the CFO and the DG, the other one is on a special, I would call it looking for a better word, on sick leave, and the other one on suspension, whatever it may be, but also the people that make the department to tick are still there, from where I understand the administration. Okay. The other one, dealing with the HR issues, if I may, link to the suspension, Chair, which we tend to, as other departments, overlook it and deal with the core mandate. When we are not dealing with the HRIR issues, also does impact in terms of the performance of the department, as it were. How much money do we spend in terms of the suspensions and all that? And how much money, if there was a good management leadership, as it were, and consequential management, as it were, expected, that would have saved money in terms of time? But you talk to that when you come back, but I'm just raising it as my observation. Okay. Let me then quickly, Chair, as a suggestion, that can the department also raise very strongly with the Treasury, yes, Finance Department, Treasury, the issue of ICT, because it doesn't just impact DERCO as it were, it impacts the whole public service. And how much money do we lose? I don't think they appreciate that. The parcel system, that is from, was in 1978, if I'm accurate, which was meant for something else, which we're still using it now. That's why our organograms are populated in the system as well. But I'm just saying that, raise that one. It's a concern. Linked to the HR issues, Chair, will be, the structure that the Treasury has given you lesser money in terms of salaries and wages, in terms of distributing of, in terms of your budget as a whole. Probably, I'm sure you are doing that, but I'm raising it because I'm coming a little bit from the cold. I can raise this one and be forgiven. That you make the Treasury to appreciate the currency play of different countries, because there might be that impact as well. So that you address the issue of also being having your salary and which is the budget being sort of going towards minus. Okay. The other one, Chair, I'm just checking my notes, you forgive me. Okay, slide 11 in terms of the DERCO report. Slide 11, let me just quickly go to it.
Okay, the acting CFO spoke about that we are looking at the issue, which I'll term it a turnaround, looking for a better way. But you can't all the years, for 20 years, keep on turning and turning, because there are people, or warm bodies, technocrats, good men and women who have been there in the system and the department for years. Because most likely, it's only senior management that gets changed. The lower level, honestly, but which talks to the issue that you are turn around, that you are going to change the picture, as it were. It doesn't sit well from this side. Because, Chair, I must tell you, I still want to come back in 2019. But with this, I won't come back.
So yeah. They are turning, but not around.
No, they don't. They are turning, because that strategic turning plan, it's a good administrative word, but you want to see the results more than anything else, which talks to the management, as it were. Slide 23, Chair, is my second one. My second one will be the last issue, Chair. I've talked to this one, the 23, which is related to ICT. How do you say? Chair, my very last one. Oh no, thank you. I've spoken to that one. It was dealing with the properties abroad as well. Other than that, Chair, probably let me just deal with this one so that also I balance my comment in terms of ARF. That it seems okay, and I'm sure moving forward also, Chair, the other programs that have not been implemented moving forward, notwithstanding that it's outside their control as it were as DERCO, because you need your counterparts also to be part of that, and also their availability and so forth. Let me thank, because the other questions have been raised by my colleagues, Chair. Thank you so much.
Honorable Puti, did you forget something?
Yeah, no, Chair. No, I just wanted to say, Chair, yes, we are here to do an oversight, and another man's meat is another man's poison. And in life, we view things in a different way. And there are all those, some of the people are very optimistic, even if we are doing oversight, but we are not here to come and be hard to those that we are politicking, that we are doing oversight to. If really people are supposed to be placed, let them do that there. So I'm not really blind to
any person, but I'm saying that another man's meat is another man's poison, even how we view things in life. Life is a journey, and I'm not going to look at negative things. If I need to praise you, I will praise you. I thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Put. I will return to what you are saying to attempt to assist ourselves. After I've made my comments, Acting DG, on page 16, on page 16 of the International Relations and Corporate, on the first quarter report, I think, for the layperson, something is not properly captured here. These numbers, Yabona DG. For instance, you say the fourth quarter report target, 100% of requests for protocol service responded to. You see that, DG?
I'm just trying to.
You're getting to page 16.
Yeah,
one.
Yeah.
And man, the target is 100%. Then, when we capture the figures, for instance, on bullet one, we say 6,667 6,676 visits facilitated through the three state protocol lounges. Now, for a layperson, it could mean two things. It could mean that there were 6,600 that were requested and these were done. And then it is 100%. But we don't, for someone else, we don't say so many were requested, even more were given. Or so many were requested and the target was reached. Just after this, now that was supposed to go into what is called the rating. The rating is blank. Or is there anything in the rating? Oh, the rating is a color code.
It's green and gold.
Okay. Now I understand. Because I was looking at the rating, I thought you were going to say under rating. That constitutes 96, 97%. Now that applies Mutatis Mutandis with the other figures then.
Sure.
And the color code.
Sure.
No, then I'm answered. Then the issues raised by members on New York. On the ICT project. Not based on New York, the ICT. The ICT is a very, very important priority that the department must consider. It has been raised by your good selves here, and it has been raised by the heads of missions in the heads of missions conference. The very first one that I attended, the ambassadors were saying, you know, ASNA security backup or checkup. Sometimes we have to go to a cafe? ICT cafe somewhere and fax the document to South Africa. Something which is not good for them, and it's also not good for DERCO. But I'm just saying we appear to be weak in this area of work, and we've been weak for a long time. I don't know what your suggestion would be, because we can isolate a few items for discussion specifically and then say to the minister, you must come here and lead a discussion on this. We don't want to ask the officials, we want to ask as a country, why are we walking naked when it comes to the ICT? And if it is a challenge of money, it is better that specifically the minister quantifies how much upgrading our ICT will need. Let's say, for argument's sake, 1 billion. And goes to government, where the Minister of Finance sits. They give us 1 billion, we fix this thing, and we're done. It's a once-off upgrade. But if you want to put it in the department, you'll keep on sitting with this problem for years on end, and it's not good for us as a state. I'm not saying get us an answer now, but you know, just say to the committee, this is how you think it should happen. And members were saying that we've been seeing this problem from 2014, and it is also an area in which you always get qualified sometimes, in addition to asset management. Now the two. In New York, you were saying there are challenges there, then regarding the two missions there. Honorable Mayila earlier on was saying New York is contested. Really, do you find any piece of land there? Well, I don't know New York. But mina bengizobuza ukuthi, and clearly from a point of ignorance, why do we need two missions there? I take it that we already have a mission. Is based somewhere, and then we have a consular general in New York, and the other one in Washington, perhaps other strategic towns. We're saying we want to acquire land in order to build a mission now. What has happened to the old one? Manja, I really don't understand what was happening. Then the next thing, there are things that didn't go well. The ARF is an important soft power intervention for a country to use to win friends or neutralize enemies using money. But you see, it is bedeviled by governance. That is why we needed to migrate from the ARF to SADPA. And we don't hear you. What is the problem? Why are we singing in the SADPA? And why don't we look at the practice of other countries? I mean, the USA has got a USAID. I don't know what Britain has, but you know, these other countries have got. Yeah, sure. In full.
The development fund, international development fund, something along those.
Yeah. Now it has a board, ne? It has a board and a CEO, but it has a governance kind of thing, because the money is from treasury, it goes to the department, and then it goes to an outfit like this. Then there must be people who sit on it, then they ensure that it is dispersed accordingly in the interest of the country. Now, if Tina, we've got the ARF, and we intervene in Cuba, Palestine, Western Sahara, and we are being looked upon that way. I'm Kalapa. I'm in a meeting.
What has two vocal chairs?
Even if you were, I was umshelela lana man during my meeting. Even if it was soft, no, but that's on a light note, Mkhalapa. No, when I call my ARF, politically, we're missing a point. You know, irrespect, because you are aware that I'm serving in the SADC Parliamentary Forum, there is great respect for South Africa, and there are many things that these other countries say, you know, we can't raise this thing in the AU, we can't raise this thing in the UNO, let South Africa raise it on behalf of South Africa. And I'm not the only one, even as officials in was with Bagwenza Law. Manje, ARF is a leverage sometimes to win friends, that even now when we're a candidate for Security Council, it's sweet that you can soft power people. Manje, if it has a problem of governance as it is, and members suspect that it can be abused, because there's a crisis in a country, you throw in money there, then we don't know whether, because Tina Oversight Model yet actually limits us into the country, we can't go there and check whether in fact the money was gainfully expended, and specifically for that project in Cuba or in Mozambique, well, if it was 100 million. Most of the time it involves big money. So if it migrate, iyago usatpa, the better. And two, we are struggling here. Only now we were able to go to one of the countries. This is actually the first oversight visit where we did this good job, because of the bill. We want to change the model, the oversight model that has been crafted here in Parliament. You oversight a Department of International Relations, but you don't go to the AU, you don't go where they are players. And we're not speaking for ourselves. We found it, this weakness being there, but we'll even speak for the next committee. And we don't think the committee can go everywhere, but if it can do what the Auditor General does, perhaps once a year, or at least visit branches, visit the Americas, not all of them, then the European countries, then maybe one country, Africa, maybe one day Asia. But to be completely at home and be an international relations committee, it doesn't augur well. So this model must be remodeled, this oversight model. I also want to close off by getting into the VIP training. This VIP training, was it a state to state? Let me put it this way. I would find it very strange if the Department of International Relations of the Central African Republic requested this department to assist. I would find it very strange. I would rather think that the head of government, the other side, and the head of government, this side, the request actually came from the president, or at least at the level of government, either the Minister of Police or the Minister of Defense, that you need to train their people. Now, even the way he sentenced Ipalonga Kwan, in South Africa, for instance, when we're talking about the VIP unit, we are referring to those who are the protection unit for the mayors, MECs, and ministers in South Africa. The presidential guard is something, is a totally different unit. You must be a soldier, you must be trained for the protocol there, you must be a soldier by training. For the VIP, the PPS in South Africa, you must be a policeman or police person. Now, last city Tina is a presidential VIP. Were we training the VIP unit for the President of the Central African Republic, or is called the Presidential VIP because it was requested by the President and then we had to take them for the training? But why was it then DERCO that pays for this thing? Why was it not the relevant authority, which is the safety and security or defense, was the government take a specific instruction and say, let the money come from the ARF? I want to get into the issues that came from Honorable Kalyan and Honorable Raphuti. But you see, DG, for as long as I've looked at this department, there are two things that seem not to go together. The political performance of the department with regard to projecting South Africa, this and that and that and that, at various levels, seem to be very good. Mm-hmm. Perhaps even by all South Africans who are from Parliament, from somewhere. I'm not so much aware that as South Africans we're projecting ourselves bad or something like that. But this department, the internal administration, is not all right. Wait, one other thing. That's why at some point we recommended that, because the DG is all over the world going to attend the meeting, for instance, of the Sherpa or the others, then followed by the minister, then followed by the president. It's understandable. Then we said, get somebody who will be a bodyguard in the office. And that was the creation of the post of the COO, Ambassador Sadi. Mm-hmm. Now, but you continue to be settled by these internal weaknesses, lack of consequence management, mm-hmm. financial management, this asset management, qualified report, Ushuguti, the internal mechanics of the department seems not to be well. And if we can just attend to that and then project our country the way we are doing, so much the better for South Africa. I said I was going to attempt to to assist the views that have been expressed here. And I'm also speaking a personal view, but I'm also going to speak both for the party and for the government. To start off with, Honorable Salian has assisted herself by saying, Kalyan, by saying it's a personal view, because she is, in terms of the Bill of Rights and the Constitution, perfectly entitled to a personal view. No matter who think that that view could or may be wrong, you're entitled to that. I mean, also I'm entitled to my views that sometimes to other people are actually wrong, you know. So many years ago, one of the French philosophers that championed this thing, which was unpopular at the time, even after that time, people still die for expressing personal views. Voltaire. Voltaire said, I may not agree with what you say, but I will defend to death your right to say it. And this is a chap who lived during the French Revolution, 17-something. And what he had said is an all-time truism until today. Just wanted to start there with regard to saying that Honorable Kalyan was correct in expressing her personal view. But once she said Women's Month, then she was politically flawed on that one. Politically flawed in that in South Africa, both the ruling party and the government have decided that there will be, in the national calendar of the government, there will be a day dedicated to the women, which is the 9th of August. It's got not necessarily, well, we know the trigger day is 1956. It's 9th of August, celebrated. So when we say in the Women's Month, this is what is happening, we can't be out of order. In terms of what the Honorable Honorable Aputua said, she can't be out of order in terms of that, saying something done by a woman in a woman's month. But there's a broader context. There's a broader context to this thing. We can't claim, and I'm not referring to Honorable Kale, we can't see that there's been a triple oppression of women in this country, in our continent, in the world, just because they are women. We can't. And no one can regard himself or herself as a progressive while he or she countenances the oppression of women who happen to constitute 55 to 56% of the world's population. And I'm going to attempt to say what it does. If humanity will say, thanks God, we are a free people, we defeated slavery and we defeated colonialism, but humanity fails to see that 56% of itself is not liberated, what is humanity saying about itself? What would it be saying about itself? That's the first thing. But the second one is the problem of patriarchy. Both in South Africa and in the continent, in the world. And look, I'm a man, and I'm socialized just like that. Not only am I a man, ngibuye engomeni yamaNdebele. But for as long, men must be disabused of thinking that their rights are better than those of the women. But most importantly, and I've said it this thing somewhere, the struggle for the liberation of women from certain things, from the things, the vestiges of colonialism, as well as patriarchy itself. The struggle to do so is not the struggle for and by the women alone. And the women who are,
a statement can come to the end because of the department. Really, really wanting to respond to the questions of the members. Mm-hmm. The chain of thought will run away.
No.
You give them that opportunity.
No,
they will make that sweeping statement that they
Which person? Consistent with where I started, I said I'll attempt to assist and express a personal view, but the view is that of the ruling party and that of... Whether you like it or you don't like it, Mkalapa, that's something else. I was saying that the... Thank you. That the struggle to do away with the vestiges of colonialism and of apartheid and of patriarchy is not an issue for the women. Progressive men must join in and do away with this so that one day, in the fullness of time, we arrive in a world where these things are done. You know, Ambassador, I don't want to attempt to look like giving a lecture. Those who lived during slavery, when the others started, no, but we must fight again. I don't think others thought it is something you can defeat. Or colonialism, you know, the British Empire. They were saying the sun never set on the British, or the Ottoman. They all got defeated because they were wrong. And so was apartheid. And so is patriarchy. So, see, we mustn't when we congratulate women in a women's month, in a government where this is an official calendar, downplay that as if it shouldn't happen that way. I thought I must assist. Where I may not be right, it's a personal view, but my party and the government, which is the ruler, feel strongly that we must challenge the oppression of women and patriarchy. Thank you. Over to the department to make responses.
Well, thanks very much, Chairperson, and thanks to the honourable members for their comments. We will share the responsibility to respond to the questions of the honourable members. To the best of our ability, to the extent that we are unable to provide a response, we plead with you to submit written responses as is the practice at a later stage. Honorable Maila, thanks very much for your compliment to DECO for its role in securing South Africa a third stint on the prestigious world body entrusted with the responsibility of promoting global peace and security, the UN Security Council. We did this at your orders. We are your instrument, and we're merely fulfilling our responsibilities. But thank you. We'll convey this message to our hardworking staff, who seldom get any acknowledgement and recognition for their role. But thanks very much. We'll convey this to them. In terms of the Kigali. In terms of the CFTA and the Kigali Declaration, the status of signature in Kigali in Rwanda in March, 43 countries signed the Kigali Declaration. And the Kigali Declaration was mainly a political statement, but it was a very profound political statement in that it committed all those who signed it to sign the CFTA at a later stage. We have signed the CFTA now. 49 countries have signed the CFTA, 49 out of 55. and for it to come to effect, it needs 22 ratifications. For now, we have got six countries have ratified. We shall come to Parliament through our partner department, DTI, to seek your consideration, your favorable consideration for the ratification of the CFTA, so that we can be one of the at least first 10 countries to have ratified the CFTA. So we shall be doing so through DTI in the next few months, if not weeks. We hope that by the time the assembly rises in January, that South Africa will be one of the countries that would have ratified the CFTA, so that it can come into effect during the course of 2019. It's going to be a very significant catalyst for the expansion of the South African trade and investment footprint on the continent, because once it's ratified and it comes into effect, it will herald the dropping of between 85% and 90% of the tariffs on the continent, thereby creating the perfect fillip for the expansion of our trade and investment footprint on the continent. So we'll be doing so in the next few months. The New York project, yes, indeed, it has been raised by a number of members in the early stages of this project, which entails the acquisition of land. There is quite a vast unoccupied landscape in New York, in spite of the vision of a concrete jungle that was seldom treated to in our on our TV screens, but also some of the lands are vacant because buildings have been demolished, old buildings have been demolished. So there is land that was earmarked, that was identified for this project, but Treasury picked up irregularities in terms of the procurement process. And these are serious irregularities which are in breach of the PFMA as well as other regulations. So we decided that we can't proceed with this project, which is built on very less than dubious, but fraudulent, not just dubious, but fraudulent foundations. So that is a decision we've taken. So we will brief Parliament, we'll brief the committee, we'll take the committee into confidence as soon as the process of investigation has been concluded. The question of the compensation of employees, it's a challenge we have. What has been allocated to us for the 2017, what was allocated for 2017-18, and also for the current financial year, to compensate the warm bodies at DECO is less than what we need. This is the problem we have. We're not talking about the vacancies, we're just talking about the warm bodies. The amount of money that we have that has been allocated is less than what we need to pay the salaries. So this is a big challenge for us. Even though we've taken very, determined measures to reduce staff and to reduce the envelope for compensation of employees, we don't see the light at the end of the tunnel. And that's part of the reason why we are making a supplementary request to Treasury so that we can have additional replenishment to be able to pay salary. So this is the challenge we have. The disciplinary against the CFO is ongoing. In terms of the Labour Relations Act, we have to conclude this process within 90 days of its assumption. Mm. So we are mindful of that. Unfortunately, we can't go into the details. But the process saves just to say that we were proceeding with this process, and as soon as it is concluded, we will apprise the esteemed portfolio committee. I think Dineo will talk to the status with regards to SATPA. Honorable Raputi, thanks very much for the compliment. Asset management, indeed, this is a monkey on our backs. We thought that we had shaken it from our backs the last time round when we got an unqualified audit. But of course it is back now. It's an albatross. We are committed to deal with this issue. And I know the disbelief in your eyes as I make the statement. It's largely due to the fact that this is a recurring matter. But we want to reassure you that we are committed to dealing with this matter. We have a detailed turnaround strategy that we'll be presenting to the audit committee this Friday. It was approved by the management yesterday. We've got all the determination to deal with it, including implementing consequence management, including training, retraining, and also reinforcing the capacity in that unit. So we're very much determined to deal with this issue. We will come and brief you on a regular basis about the efforts that we're taking to shake this monkey off our backs. Honorable Makgalapa is not here. I don't know whether I should.
Yeah, I will take his response. He had another meeting at 1.
Okay, must.
You're responding to the comment, not Makgalapa.
Okay.
But of course, he has attended another meeting.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll share it that way.
Okay. Yes, indeed. We thank the committee for its wisdom in proposing that we create the post of the COO, Chief Operations Officer. And I must admit, on behalf of the department, that. We have not defined this position in as clear a manner as you would have hoped when you conceived of the idea of the creation of this position. There's a discussion that is going on now within management as part and parcel of the overall organizational review and streamlining, which will include the position of the COO. So the outcome of that process, I'm quite certain, will provide greater clarity and will be more precise in terms of the roles and functions of the COO, which should be similar to the roles of the position in the corporate world, as well as in other setups where it exists. And this is one of the things that we had put on the table for management to consider. Because currently the functions of the COO are spread across other units. Some are in corporate management, others are in finance, others of course are still resident in the DG's office. So there has to be a streamlining of these functions so that we can locate the functions that are ordinarily resident in the office of the COO to that office. So that process is ongoing. We have a new DDG, Corporate Management, Mr. Kenny Kavenda, whom we'll introduce at the appropriate time. He started 3 weeks ago. So he has been entrusted with the responsibility to lead the process of organizational renewal as part and parcel of the renewal agenda that was outlined by the President during his inaugural State of the Nation address, where he also spoke about his goal, his objective of reorganizing government as a whole. So we're also undertaking a similar process at DECO of organizational renewal and realignment. Indeed, we are concerned about the regression as well. We've mentioned that. New York, we've dealt with that issue. CFO matter, we've dealt with that. On the Kagame report, is being discussed currently in Windhoek by the SADC ministers, and it will be discussed. That discussion will be finalized by the heads of state. There will be a final summit, a special summit in November to take final decisions on the Kagame report. In the meantime, the proposal around the 0.2 levy is still on the table. A number of countries have already indicated that they are implementing the 0.2 levy. As you know, we've expressed our difficulties and challenges as a country in terms of that. While we agree with the overall spirit of making the AU to be self-sufficient, self-funding, and not to be dependent on donor funding. At the same time, we have expressed our challenges vis-à-vis the implementation of the 0.2 levy, which are largely regarding our international obligations through the world trading system with the WTO at its apex, that if we were to implement this, would be infringing on the most favored nation clause, which requires us not to discriminate against imports from any region. So if we're to impose a 0.2 levy on imports other than those of Africa, over and above the levies that we're already imposing on goods from other countries, that would be regarded as unfair treatment. So that's one of the challenges. The other, of course, is the domestic challenge, which requires that all funds generated through taxes or any levies by the state should be deposited in the National Revenue Fund. We can't impose this levy, take the funds and send them to Addis. The funds must be deposited in the National Revenue Fund, and then they are dispersed by Parliament upon the decision of the National Assembly through the appropriations following the delivery of the budget vote or the budget speech by the Minister of Finance. This is our process. So we have explained these matters to the AU, and I think there's an understanding and appreciation of the unique circumstances of South Africa. But we maintain our contribution as a first-tier member, first-tier country. We are one of the five top contributors, contributing almost 10% now to the AU budget, 9.6% to the AU budget. So there is an understanding of that circumstance. Ambassador Sally will deal with the Morocco question. And the question of the CAR, the training of the VIP the presidential unit, there was a request some years back by then President Bozize, following repeated attacks by various militias, rebel groups, who were bent on launching a coup. Because if you'd recall, East Central African Republic is one of those countries that has never really enjoyed any stability. Ever since the ouster of Jean Bedel Bokassa in the 80s, the country has had a string of coups. And the rationale, therefore, was that you have to protect the order, prevent the rebels, militias, and other groupings from launching an unconstitutional seizure of power by protecting the office, not necessarily about the individual, but it's about the office. And that was the context. And of course, we then got requests not only from the government of the CAR, but also from the countries in the region, the CEMAC region. At the time, the chair was President, the late President Omar Bongo of Gabon, who made this request to former President Mbeki. And then, of course, this was actualized only during the time of President Zuma, because these requests take time to eventually respond to and implement. So that is the context around the issue of the CAR. Honorable Killian, asset management, we've dealt with that question. VIP protection for CAR, we've dealt with that. In terms of precedence, there's been previous experiences where we've had to provide this kind of protection in Burundi. When we're mediating, we provided VIP protectors. But of course, this was not limited to the president at the time, but it covered all the groupings that were involved in the negotiations that led to eventually the signing of the Arusha Agreement. The question of the PAP, the acting CFO will respond. Yeah. You want to respond to that? Okay. On the question of the next session of the PAP, we are host country of the PAP, and in terms of the host country agreement, we have an obligation to ensure its sessions are provided with the necessary logistics and finance so that these sessions can be held here in South Africa. But if they are held outside of South Africa, we don't carry that responsibility. It will be the host country. In this case now, it will be Rwanda that will carry the expenses related to the hosting of the next session of the PAP.
Sorry, DG, just to come in. I think you must understand the context in which Honorable Salian was raising things. Yes. You see, what has happened, members, let me make my point. No, you'll come in, Honorable Kalyan. I'm just making, I'm just assisting the DG and the officials. You see, at a political level, South Africa is supposed to enjoy what the USA is enjoying by hosting the United Nations headquarters. You know, tourism, all of those business, all of those things. And so is the AU in Addis Ababa. Now what happens in South Africa, there are weaknesses. One is that we are not building the headquarters of the PAP. And that makes us very vulnerable, as you are aware, to groupings like Morocco, Egypt, and now even Kagame and others who are saying, because they, you don't have this, and we can take the headquarters. And these guys are using money to mobilize other people. We could lose the PAP. Two, we allow the PAP, whenever there is a Secretary General in Mbiza, the President, the Speaker, who is French and what, many of the people who are employed there are not South African. Now, what's the point of hosting this? It's a thing I've been in our lab. And the last one, Uroja, even wanted to bring security companies. That came from, yeah. And we all know yeah, okay, I will leave the part I was going to say. But the point I'm making is that we don't seem to be having the benefit that we should be having. And Onokalia has been whispering to me these things many a times, that, hey, man, there is this, these guys just do this. There are things we should be taking benefit of. For instance, the SADC Parliamentary Forum is in Namibia. It is logical that the people who are sweeping and making tea there, other things there, it's actually them. This thing does not translate into that, and the government is just oblivious to things like that. You've got the president there with the speaker. Where are Zenzel and Jay? I think we're very lax about it. But if Afunu Kulma on this one, she has got better detail. Onokalian, you wanted to come in?
I just wanted to know, I had asked specific questions in terms of the presidential VIP unit, how many people, over what period of time. I'm not talking about the protection and the peacekeeping in Burundi. I'm talking about specifically this thing. And then the asset management unit, you've explained, but you haven't gone into detail. How many people are there? Is there a vacancy? I heard you say that they need to have capacity and all that. So are you going to give me that in writing? And then I must just, while I have the floor, say that I know that Delco has been trying to resolve the situation at the Pan-African Parliament, where the clerk has been arbitrarily fired, and a decision was taken by the Executive Council and the PRC to suspend the budget of the Pan-African Parliament until an audit is done. And a directive was given that the suspension of the clerk should be lifted with immediate effect. That has not happened. He has actually been barred from coming to the premises. And what is also concerning, now I know that it's an AU matter, that he's not being paid for the time he's being suspended or fired, whatever it is. My understanding is he was fired. You cannot fire someone who was appointed by Parliament. If Parliament appointed him by decision, I think it's Rule 20, bracket 3 of the rule book, then Parliament should have had a say in it. So, and then what is his status? Because I've seen the letter to Durko to terminate his visa and what have you, so that he then becomes an illegal in the country. So it is quite concerning what is happening, and I can see why the president, the current president, wants to run away to Kigali and have the session there because he doesn't want to be accountable to the host country. Anyway, that's just a comment.
Yeah. You know, on our Kalyan, some of the small Nyana, you know, this agency speak, some of the small Nyana things that some of you have seen there that we think are not assisting the country. I don't know whether you could note them and then they should via the committee, but we can then bring them to the attention of of the department. Just to ensure, please ensure that South Africans are employed, they are as translators as that and that, as sweepers, as drivers, as there are things that...
The drivers are from Cameroon. All the drivers are from Cameroon.
You see. So, we need to benchmark with other countries and then and see if we should not attend to them. They may appear to be small, but they are very strategic. You know, somebody told me that in the diplomatic world, the sweeper or the tea maker is actually a very important job because she can make a tea for you that can make you rest for the rest of your life. So she needs or he needs to be vetted.
Mm-hmm.
Can't say no, he's just sweeping. Or the person who drives you. And when you kulum with diplomat lab, and this person is actually an intelligence of a particular country or the very country you are in. You see, so but more if Kalyan, you can pick on these things.
Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah. No, thanks, Chair, thanks, Honorable Member. Indeed, we appreciate the committee's observations and guidance in this regard. We have been aware of these matters, Chairperson, as you would recall from previous briefings on this subject. There is an interministerial committee chaired by Deputy Minister Landers that is seized with these issues on a regular basis. And I think when the next occasion allows, permits that he is available for the committee, I think it would be appropriate that he deals with these issues, responds and these issues. We will brief him about your concerns in this regard, but we are very much alive to these issues. We were merely responding to the question of Kigali, because it's not unusual for AU organs to hold their meetings in capitals other than the host capitals, such as the AU. The last assembly meeting of the assembly took place in Nouakchott, in Mauritania, and not in Addis. But that does not, in any way, diminish the importance of the issues that you have raised. And I think we'll come back to you, Honourable Member, on the details around the assets, the staff, and all that. We'll come back to you on that. My colleagues have taken note of those matters. On the question...
And I've lost a lot of colleagues on my side.
You've lost... Yes, no, I'm going to move quickly, Chair. On the question of Namibia, as we said, we'll await the report. And of course, repeat our appreciation, reiterate our appreciation for sharing matters with us in this regard. Meli Suma, ICT definitely an important matter. It's high on our radar. It's one of the top priorities in terms of our turnaround strategy. The Chair also raised this matter. we definitely are prioritizing it. Ambassador Sally is the chair of the ICT steering committee, and they've been doing some work in that regard. You know that we lost the head of ICT. He passed away in April this year, and he has been before then he had been in and out of hospital. We're not raising that as an excuse, but we've had some challenges in our ICT, but we'll be implementing our turnaround strategy. The last time that we rehabilitated our infrastructure was more than 10 years ago. So that accounts for the challenges that we have in the system now. ICT, normally for an organization to function optimally, every 2 years you have to refresh your infrastructure and your software. So we'll be looking at that. Chairperson, I think we take note of your final comment that from your observations, your performance from a foreign policy perspective has been fully effective and in some instances commendable. But from an administration governance perspective, it's been wanting. I think that summarizes. I think that's a good summary of the overall appraisal of our department. And we want to assure you and the committee that we will be addressing, we'll be attending to these shortcomings. Next year this time, we hope that we'll be giving a report that demonstrates that we've taken corrective and remedial measures to address most of the shortcomings. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, DG. Honourable Kalyan, you had requested something on the 10th BRICS Summit.
Oh, just briefly, we never got an invitation to attend BRICS, which is very unfortunate because this committee is the oversight on responsibilities of the department, and we were assured by the DG that we would get an invitation. We got an SMS the night before of some cultural function, and really that's not my duty here to attend a cultural function. My duty is to
political oversight. So I was quite disappointed that this committee as a whole was not invited. And I hope that at some stage we will get a report on the resolutions and the memorandums of understanding that were signed. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kalia. The department has taken note of that and it will respond to us in due course. In the management committee yesterday, I was mandated by the management committee to write to the minister and they asked the department to make a presentation on the 10th BRICS Summit next week, Wednesday. Yeah. In addition to the issue of the committee, which will be this Namibia visit, we want a detailed presentation on the 10th BRICS Summit. We also want a DG a presentation on the latest political developments around the elections in Zimbabwe. We're aware that there's been an intervention by the court which delayed the inauguration of the president. So there's sort of a political stroke constitutional crisis there, or electoral crisis perhaps to be specific. We did the same thing. We requested a briefing when there was a crisis in Lesotho, because we are members of parliament. For us to formulate questions for oral reply or for a written reply or for debates in the house depends on the quality of information that we have. So The letter will say 10th BRICS Summit, then it will say Zimbabwe, then it will say Mali, and other elections that have, would have taken place in the continent, like for instance the DRC. But it may not be everything. I think Zimbabwe, Mali, DRC. Then perhaps next time then we can put the other, so that the members as a public representatives can be kept abreast about these developments. Now, why we didn't come there, you will tell us some other day about the BRICS. But I can share my view. Personally, and I suspect that I could be wrong, I was thinking that the BRICS is more in the domain of the executive rather than in parliament. And that could be the reason why we're not invited. But also I thought the BRICS is beyond this committee. For instance, you've got the Department of Economic Development, Minister Patel there, and you've got the DTI, is it still Davis?
Yeah.
Then it's Davis, then it is Sisulu this side. So what you do, if you invite us, then, because BRICS being BRICS, then you can't leave the two other committees. I answered that way to one of the members who was asking why, and he was saying I'm a take issue. I said, but what about the other committees that are affected? Because this grouping is more about economic, whatever, economic. So, but I could be wrong. So try to clear it, and so that next time members can know where the department stands on this, so that they don't think either the chair doesn't push for this thing or the department is undermining us in yet what that and that and that. Honourable Maila, you want to assist us further?
No, I didn't want to assist you. You were actually making me worried. I align myself with what Honourable Kalyan has said, and I would expect the department to come up with an answer. Please be part of us.
He extended an invitation to us in the committee and chairperson. You know, I disagree with you that it's not in our domain. Those MOUs that are signed must come to this committee. We must endorse it in the House.
Yeah.
So if you don't know what it is about and it's going to come here, what are you going to do? Just rubber stamp. That's not our job. All those MOUs that are signed have to come, have to be ATC'd and put before the House for adoption. Anyway, that's it.
Thank you very much, Honourable Kalyan. Honourable members and DG and your team, thank you very much for a very productive discussion. Very productive discussion. The meeting is adjourned. Is lunch served? Okay.
Thank you. Thank you very much.